in America. I don't know. Is there another one, Peter? I think you're alone.
Well, of course, there's Michelangelo. But he's on Sirius Satellite. I'm not aware of any others. There may very well be, but I'm not aware.
And he's not near as fabulous as you are. Anyway, Peter, of course, appears right after Bob Kincaid's show at 9 p.m., right?
That is Eastern right, time? From 9 till 11 p.m.
That's from 9?
Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! One minute past the hour of 6 o'clock here on the East Coast, and it is Friday, and we have successfully navigated the rocks and shoals of yet another week with several hours of scintillating conversation radio here on America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course, but you know that. Maybe folks listening in on other services who haven't, not so familiar with the show, don't know it, but yeah, I am. I really am. Let's see. Where all do we get out to now? Let's see. The website, of course, headonradionetwork.com. There's an embedded player that we're very grateful to our buddies over at WD40.com for putting on their website. There's an embedded horn player on the pages of afterdowningstreet.org. We're also heard on receiva.com and radiotime.com and phonostar.com. And last but certainly not least, iTunes Radio Talk Spoken Word. True internet media saturation in a new media paradigm that we love to call the Horn. So welcome aboard, one and all, whether you're listening live or listening via podcast. We're grateful that you share your time with us any way that you do it. And by us, I mean all of us. Guy James, Mark Levine, John Fox, Peter Godbold, me, Agnes, the moderators in the headonradionetwork.com chat room, which if you've never been there, by Jove, you should go as soon as possible. It is, after all, free. And how much is free on the internet anymore? Not a lot. The News Ninjas, thank you as well. And the whole community, the family that we've built here at The Horn. We're always happy to see more folks coming to the table. This is, of course, Friday night, and if it's Friday, that must mean it's time for our weekly conversation with MakeThemAccountable.com's Carolyn Kay. Caro is with us again, and tickled I am to have you aboard, Caro. Hope it was a good week for you.
Hi, Bob. It was a great week. Being a Clinton supporter, it was excellent.
Yeah, because I think had she not done Texas and Ohio, do you think the conventional wisdom was correct that she would have had to bow out?
The conventional wisdom was that she ought to bow out anyway. I swear to God, these people are like, they want her down, they want her out, they don't want her in the thing, they want her to get out of Barack's way.
You know how bad it's gotten, Caro? We never have done this because we're really, really sincerely devoted to the idea of free speech on the Horn. But in the chat room, we had to install a filter that blocked the word Hitlery. But, of course, we blocked a lot of other words that could conceivably be used with regard to Barack Obama as well.
That's a right-wing thing. The right-wingers have been calling Hillary that for years.
apparently it's gotten some legs on the left.
But you see, that's what bothers me. That is what is really bothering me, is that I keep seeing what we used to fight as the Bush bots, I am now seeing as anti-Hillary folks on the progressive blogs and in the progressive forums. It really bothers me.
And, I've adopted a new philosophy as of this week, Carol.
What's that?
Now that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee has bowed out of the race, having failed to get the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking
did
fundamentalist to give him Texas.
Did he win even one delegate?
I don't know. I don't think so. but with him bowing out, you know, it's McCain. And as a consequence of that, I have turned my focus to John McCain. Because, I mean, how many Democratic primaries are left, not counting Michigan and Florida?
Well, we don't have very many, but there are some things that could happen that could change the results, and we could go over some of those if you like.
Well, sure, but obviously Pennsylvania is the largest remaining jewel.
Right.
Assuming,
but there are two jewels that have been pushed aside.
Right, Michigan and Florida, it appears more and more that they're just going to get a sandlot do-over, right?
It looks as though the Clinton campaign has eased its... At first it said, you know, they should be seated as is. Well, of course, you know, she got the overwhelming vote there in both of those states, so... but now that she has some momentum of her own, she's eased up on that a little bit, and it does look as though the states are going to be willing to do something. But neither one of them wants to have a full election, which could cost, you know, tens of millions of dollars, and nobody wants to pay for it. The DNC can't pay for it; it doesn't have any money, and the campaigns.
Wait, time out. The DNC doesn't have any money?
Not much.
I guess the individual campaigns are controlling all the dough, right?
The campaigns, and also the DCCC, the two congressional committees, the House Congressional Committee and the Senate Congressional Committee, have tons of money, tons and tons and tons of money. But and the individual campaigns do as well.
Yeah, I get email solicitations for money from the DCCC and the DSCC. Approximately every 19.37 seconds.
Well, that may be a little bit of an exaggeration, but yes, they do ask for a lot of money, and a lot of people get they've been very smart about using missteps and misstatements from right wingers of all sorts, including candidates, to raise money. You know, when somebody on the right does something really stupid, they send out a little alert, you know, if you want to stop this kind of thing, donate to the DCCC or the DSCC. And that's exactly what they should be doing. That is exactly what they should be doing.
Because there is a congressional race going on, too, that we seem to forget about.
hard to imagine.
And there's a lot of significance to it. There's a distinct opportunity on the part of the Democrats in the Senate to pick up 60 or better Senate seats.
Yes, as though they really needed that. They really only need 51, but according to them, they've been hiding behind the fact that that the Republicans are willing to use the filibuster, where they never were. The
right.
Democrats never did, but the Republicans are using it all over the place to keep the Democrats from. I mean, they're using every last finger hold that they have on power to keep the other side from doing, you know, what it considers harm to the country. And that's what the Democrats should have done.
Well, of course,
they were out of power.
Right, but you had Bill the Cat Killer Frist saying, so help me God, if you filibuster, I'll take your filibuster away and stick it in you and break it off.
Well, you know, I was talking to a friend about that recently. I said, why don't they think, because the Republicans are now using the filibuster to stop everything, okay? They're trying to stop all business in the Senate unless they get
right.
their way. And so I told a friend, I said, we just do away with the damn thing. And he said, oh, but then when the Democrats got back in, I said, well, when they were out of power, they didn't use it. So what's the point of having it? If it's only good for Republicans, do away with it. But don't go making sense or anything like that, you know.
Well, that raises a larger question, and I've had a bunch of email off and on for several months now, Caro, about this. Is there any hope of anybody starting a groundswell or a rumbling of any sort to get us a newer, better, meaner, feistier Senate Majority Leader than Harry Reid?
I don't know if there is. You know, I've been pretty dissatisfied with the guy too, and one of the reasons why I was hoping that Dick Durbin would move up the ladder, and I'm glad he's now Deputy Majority Leader or whatever. He's next in line. And
he seems to have some fire in the belly.
He does, and he certainly speaks the right language, and he talks about the right things. But whether he would be bolder, I don't know, as a leader, because the Democrats, just as a party, as a group, are so timid. They don't believe in fighting for what they consider to be right. You know, it's all calculation. What will this do to this slice of the electorate, and what will that do to that slice of the electorate? And just, instead of just saying, you know, we're just going to do what's right, and to heck with you slices of population. I just wish we could see that. You know, that is what
I'm still steamed about the telecom vote, Caro. I won't kid you.
Oh, yeah.
And I can imagine that you probably are as well.
Disappointed, steamed, yeah. To all of it.
Mark Levine, who does a show from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on this network, has been going round and round with Jim Webb's office. You know, Jim Webb said remember back when he said he refused to speak to Bush or go to some Bush reception or something like that? Well,
he went to a Bush reception and refused to. Bush asked him, Bush was in the, he went through the receiving line, and Bush asked him about his son, I think, and his son was in Iraq at the time. I don't know if he still is.
How's your boy there, Jim?
Yeah, and Webb just didn't want to engage on that, and I don't blame him.
I don't either. But so a lot of people said, you know, hey, look, looks like he's going to do the right thing. You know, because some of us, you know, real live, honest to God liberals, were a little nervous about Jim Webb. What with him being a former Republican, former Reagan Secretary of the Navy, you know. You kind of wonder what you're getting when you get one of those crossover guys. You know, glad to have the numbers in the Senate, I guess. But felt a little bit. I mean, certainly he was better than George Allen. I mean, let's not make any mistake. But by the same token, he turns around and does. I mean, not just the wrong thing, but the dead wrong thing. The couldn't be any wronger if he tried to be so. Thing with the telecom vote, and Mark Levine is hotter than a $2 pistol over this, and can't get any kind of a response. Mark's one of his constituents. You know, Mark lives in Virginia,
yeah,
and can't even get so much as a real response other than a form letter. And so the Senate is greatly disturbing to me because.
But I'm not sure it would be that much different if there were 60 of them.
Well, that's my next question.
If there were 60 Democrats, you know, would four or five of those Democrats be in, you know, in the situations where they might lose their seat if they didn't kowtow to the telecoms or kowtow to the whoever's the corporation, the other kinds of corporations? I mean, you know, really.
Well, the point is, if you get 60 senators, some of those senators are still Bill Nelson of Florida and Ben Nelson of Nebraska and Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas and Pryor from Arkansas and Mary Landrieu from Louisiana. And that's that whole gang of mugwumps that live to do things like putting Sammy Alito on the court.
Yes.
So, you know, you just, I guess it's one of those situations, Caro, where you kind of cross your fingers, say a prayer, do a rosary, whatever, and hope that they find some spine somewhere along the way.
Well, I'm talking to some people that are going to be starting a third party, and normally, you know, we've talked about this before, normally third party efforts are doomed and you know, certainly if you just try to do it at the top, you know, have somebody elected president, forget it. You know, that's not going to work. But these people are talking about getting the most liberal, most progressive members of Congress to join this party, this third party, and caucus with the Democrats. Okay. And I'm thinking that, of course, I don't know what their structures are at home, you know, for, you know, fundraising and all that kind of stuff to be able to continue to get reelected. But the idea that they could be a third party and caucus with the Democrats might give them more power than they have right now. Because look at poor Feingold trying to do the right thing, and look at poor Kucinich in the House, you know,
hanging on for dear life.
Wait a minute.
How big a group? Do you have any numbers, any ideas how big a group, at least ambitiously, that would be?
No, I'll try to look that up, because there is a progressive caucus in Congress. I don't know how many members it has. I'll have to check that out.
I think that would be kind of interesting, because I don't know who the liberals are anymore. Because if you rely on the so-called professional media, you know, if you got a D behind your name, you know, you eat babies for lunch.
That's right.
And you know, the thing that came out the other day, God, it gets so tiring, because it's just the same crap recycled for people who don't have apparently very long memories. You know, Barack Obama is the most liberal member of the United States Senate. Oh,
and
please.
He's not, by any stretch of the imagination.
Neither's Hillary.
No.
You got a couple of great big honking centrists.
But of course they've said for years, the right wing has said for years that Hillary Clinton is this crazed communist left.
Oh, I know. We'll all be singing the Internationale on May 1st. Jiminy Christmas.
But we'll be wearing burkas while we do that, you know.
Or Birkenstocks.
Or the women will, anyway.
Yeah. Burkas and Birkenstocks. Hey, it may be next year's fashion statement.
What a statement.
Oh, but you know, I put forward a theory last night on the show, Caro, because we started off talking about, you know, there's only a few primaries left, and with this teeny tiny.
No, not true. There are still five or six.
That's what I said. A few.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said two.
No.
Go ahead.
No. There's only a few primaries left, and with the wind down factor going on, you would think that the vitriol would at least sort of, you know, like water, seek its own level. The vitriol going one way and the vitriol going the other.
You talking about on the Democratic side?
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. But it's not.
It's going higher and higher and higher the fewer primaries remain.
But the numbers of those two candidates get higher and higher and higher against McCain as that happens. Okay? So I'm thinking this is a good thing. and Walter Shapiro had a column in Salon a couple of days ago that said, let them duke it out. He said, this is the greatest thing since the movies quit having double features.
Well, Guy James did point out that traditionally Democratic nominations are not locked up in March. They're not locked
up
in April.
Dull.
John Kerry's nomination was an aberration, that he did lock it up so soon, and that's because he just outmoneyed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual to see a nomination. Well, Bill Clinton locked up his nomination in June of 1992.
Mm-hmm.
It's reality television, Caro.
What it is is Obama supporters not wanting to continue to put their candidate through the crucible here, and therefore they want Hillary to drop out because she's standing in his way. Now, what does that sound like? To me, it sounds like the aftermath of the 2000 election, when the Bush supporters and the media decided that Al Gore had lost. Even before all the votes were counted, they decided that Al Gore had lost, and therefore he should get out of the race. Instead of fighting to have all the votes counted to find out who really won the election.
Well, what are the mathematics of the delegates? You read six stories, you get six different accounts. Is there any hard and fast?
No.
You know, this is the real answer.
There's no hard anything, because that's the way the various and sundry things have set it up. Craig Crawford had a write up. And what did he say? The dirt on delegates or something like that. It's at makethemaccountable.com. You can go there today and look for today's posting on media news, and check out what Craig Crawford has to say, because he has some very interesting information. Number one is that these caucuses, people are counting the number of delegates in the caucuses when those delegates from caucuses are really delegates to go to a state convention at which the delegates for the state are elected to go to the national convention to represent whichever candidate. Okay?
Okay.
Number one. Number two, in a lot of states, the candidates may be pledged, but they are not bound by law. And those who are bound by law to vote for a particular candidate only are bound on the first ballot.
The first ballot. Right, right.
And
after that, it's smoke-filled rooms.
The superdelegates can vote for whoever they want to. And, of course, there's a hell of a lot of pressure right now on the superdelegates to vote the way their districts did. And that kind of makes sense. But if you're going to go ahead and do that and not give superdelegates any leeway at all, then why have them? Why do we even have them? Okay. So read that article by Craig Crawford, and he's CQ Politics, and he's on some of the political shows too on cable TV, and he's
mm-hmm.
real good. He's one of the few that's truly objective, you know. And so he's got all this interesting information, which leads to the fact that nobody is assured anything at this point. And they're only within 100 or so of each other, but everything the Obama camp wants to spin as its victory. We're a victory. We won Texas. We won Texas because we got more delegates, or we didn't lose as many delegates as blah, or it's a victory for us, and kick that old lady off her pedestal because, you know, we're the ones that are winning this race. And the fact is that nobody is winning.
And Pennsylvania doesn't.
A sweep
doesn't change anything for either side, does it? For the
that's the point. But they say, see, Clinton can't clinch a majority prior to the convention. Oh, and Obama can't either.
This is going that, and I guess that's my ultimate point, Caro. This is going to the convention.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what happens with Florida and Michigan and how they decide to go about either redoing those or you know, whatever. But, you know, it's possible now that the media have finally started asking some questions about Barack Obama, and we've started to see that some of his campaign rhetoric is just that rhetoric, and that his advisors are going around saying other things than what he is saying on the campaign trail, that he's not necessarily this new kind of politician that everybody, and that this Tony Rezko trial is showing us that Obama comes out of a huge cesspool of political.
Oh, you mean Chicago politics?
He's just a regular politician, guys. Face it.
But what about this business, Caro, with Hillary's comment about McCain being what, more experienced, or that really set a lot of teeth on edge, especially the people who want to go out and beat McCain.
Well, if you think about it, she could have been positioning. I mean, you know, I don't have any sort of in on the campaign's thinking or anything like that. But she could have been positioning herself against McCain in the general election. And trust me when I say, you know, the general that said recently, oh, there's going to be attacks inside the United States, and there's the Bush administration is going to use every feature, function, facility of government that it possibly can use between now and the November election to stress, you know, terror, war, whatever, and to use that to make McCain the best, you know, to make people think McCain in terms of voting. And So for Clinton to align herself with in that situation, that, you know, I'm the person to face McCain, you know, I don't see a problem with that.
Well, I'm a real weirdo, Carol. because I try to take all this internecine stuff and see it in its best light.
See it in a
in its best possible light.
Okay.
When I saw the stuff with Senator Clinton saying that McCain had more experience, I did the math. And you know what? Senator McCain has been in the Senate longer than Barack Obama has. He's also been in the Senate longer than Hillary Clinton has. He is, by definition, therefore, more experienced than the both of them put together.
Well,
however, if you spend your time in the Senate glad-handing Charles Keating and swanning about with blonde-headed hoes who look a lot like your wife,
and you miss a lot of votes, which he has done. I mean, he's kind of like George Bush about it. He said, you know, it's not his first priority, you know, that job.
Right. There's experience and there's experience.
Yes.
I mean, George Bush had experience as a governor of a state. Well,
oh, Lord. But, yes,
you know, these are amorphous words, experience and change. And, you know, the stuff that's been bandied
right,
about.
You know,
I'm hell-bent on beating John McCain. Therefore, I have enunciated a policy on this network, or at least on this program. I don't editorialize for the other hosts. Henceforward, I'm going forward and hammering McCain at every turn.
That sounds like a good idea.
And I will leave I will leave the internecine squabbling to either side.
But I can tell you that the fact that this has America on the edges of their seats, and that, you know, people are, CNN has reshowed its debates, its Democratic debates. Why? Because people are interested. This is the first time in my lifetime, really, I guess except for the time that Bobby Kennedy was running, was just a short period of a few months there. This is the first time in my life that there has been such an exciting primary. And it's the first time in many years that the Democrats have gotten the kind of press coverage that they have been getting. And I think that's a good thing because, you know, for years and years, the Republicans were the ones who you know, forged into people's brains what they stand for, smaller government, all this stuff that's not true, okay. But people believe it. Smaller government, fiscal responsibility, government leaves you alone, blah, 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 all this stuff that was never true, but people could recite it, you know. And at the same time, they would say, well, gee, I really don't know what the Democrats stand for. Well, now they're getting an earful, and they're sitting up, and they're paying attention, and they're watching it. And I think that's a good thing.
And what's to watch on the Republican side? Oh, they've had their coronation.
And that's one of my, that's another one of my points, is that there's nothing going on the other side except McCain hiring a lobbyist once a day.
Well, that and the fact that he had his little Rose Garden. This was the part that I just loved, Caro. He had the Rose Garden ceremony or whatever, wherever it was, the North Lawn, South Lawn, out by the car wash, whatever, at the White House.
Well, it had to be away from the White House, I guess, because, you know, you're not supposed to politic.
No, they were at the White House. But I guess maybe you can't be in the White House, or it's like,
I don't know.
The pool room rule, and you got to have 1 foot on the floor. But at any rate, they had the ceremony, and George talked for most of it, just talked right over McCain, and McCain sat there and, you know, just like he did in South Carolina in 2000 when they accused him of fathering a black baby, just stood there and took it, the fun part was the next morning. When there wasn't a peep on the RNC homepage about it, and not a peep on the McCain homepage about it. Not a word about the Bush endorsement. What does that tell you?
I thought McClatchy had a fun headline on that. That McCain wins Bush endorsement.
Wins, yeah.
McCain wins.
Let me see here. Heads, it's McCain. Tails, it's McCain. Damn, it's McCain. Oh, I love
this. This is so funny.
But the thing is that we cannot leave behind the fact that the right wing machine, no matter how crappy a candidate they have, is still gearing up for their usual nasty business.
And as I said, they're gearing up the entire mechanism of government to help get McCain elected. So what we seriously need to think about, friends, is which of the two candidates left to us at this point is better at fighting that right wing. We really do have to think about that.
And, you know, for me, it's not getting any easier. Living here in West Virginia, where there is actually a war going on against us by the coal companies, I'm not kidding. My windows rattle two or three times a day now from the mountaintop removal job that doesn't even have a permit, mind you, that they're doing about 2 miles down the road.
Oh, my God.
I had to check out both McCain. Well, no, McCain's just, you know, lost ball in high grass. Yeah, bomb him again. I've always found bombing to be good. No, I had to check out Senator Clinton and Senator Obama's positions on this. On the one hand, Senator Obama has been traveling about, being swanned along on the arm of Jay Rockefeller, and declared to a crowd not too far from our little coal fields over the past weekend that he wants America and Appalachia in particular to become, and I quote, the Saudi Arabia of coal.
Oh, Lord.
On the other hand...
I think that means more missing mountaintops.
Well, on the other hand, however, I went over and checked out Senator Clinton's position on blowing up West Virginia and ruining my children's future. And the coal companies like her so much, they gave her a B-plus on her energy policy.
Oh, Lord.
So, you know, I remember an old Mad Magazine cartoon that said, express your opinion in the ballot booth, and it showed a guy walking in in a trench coat, pulling the curtain, and then a puddle just forming at his feet.
I remember the guy with Spy versus Spy.
Yeah, Don Martin, Sergio. I think this one was a Sergio Argani's cartoon. But I'm not one of these ignorant single issue voters like, you know, the so-called pro-life people who come scurrying out from under the baseboards every 4 years like the cockroaches that they are. But I got to pay attention to what's happening close to home. And I guess for me, I don't know how I get it. You know, I could call either campaign until hell freezes over, and they're like, "Who are you?" I'm just a guy that's getting, you know, whose family's getting blown up by 3 million pounds of high explosives a day. That's who I am. I have looked, and I can't find a straight answer because I find this thing called clean coal on both of their agendas.
Well, I can say this that Clinton has signed on to that. Apollo program for energy.
Yeah, and that is significant.
The idea is to supersede any type of fossil fuel, and you know, with all sorts of different kinds of fuel, different kinds of ways of providing energy. And you know, one of the things that I do every day is an environment section for my website, and there's some really, really exciting things going on. And I have to presume that a lot of those things are going to be Al Gore and all of the efforts that he's working on. I mean, that guy's going to be a super billionaire one of these days because of not only his efforts. Now, some people would say, oh, well, that's conflict of interest. But he's putting his money where his mouth is. You know.
By the way, who gets on better with Al Gore, Obama or Clinton?
I believe which of the two gets along better?
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm sure that Al Gore has some, you know.
And Al Gore is, of course, a superdelegate.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yes, he is.
He is. I do know that he has been one of the people that said he wanted to stay neutral in order to be able to you know, broker any kind of situation if necessary, and I think that's a good thing.
What about the so-called dream team ticket, Kara?
The what? Dream ticket?
Yeah.
Well, the only way it would work would be if Obama were to swallow his pride a little bit, and he is a prideful kind of guy. I hate to tell you, Obama supporters. If he were to swallow his pride a little bit and accept the vice presidency position, he could help ensure 16 years of Democratic presidents.
And that's about how long it's going to take to fix this mess, isn't it?
Pardon?
That's about how long it's going to take to fix this mess.
It might not even be done by then, but hopefully they'll have made some inroads into it. And it wouldn't work the other way because, you know, presumably whatever Democrat might get in, this year, and I'm not convinced that Obama could beat McCain, but let's say that he did and that he became president. Let's say he rolled over to the next administration, had a full 8 years. Even after 4 years, Clinton would be really too old to run for the presidency at that time. I think, you know, Reagan, I know, was...
She's what, 60, is she 61?
But he was an anomaly. You know, it takes so much out of you that I just don't... you know, how McCain is doing this, I don't know. But once you get 69, 70, 71 years old, that's pushing it a lot for the kind of campaigning that you have to do nowadays anyway. So the way it would work, I mean, Barack is really too young right now to be running for president. In another 8 years, he will be just the right age. He will have had, you know, 8 years of learning the ropes.
Seasoning.
Behind him. And I truly believe that a Clinton president would give him significant things to do, significant things to work on, and for the first time in his life, he could actually sit down and accomplish some things. So that would, you know, it would be to everybody's advantage.
Okay, but in the larger scheme of things, what do you think the odds are of the dream ticket actually being pushed as a viable idea?
Well, Clinton has said that she would, you know, go along with that. The holdup is Obama, and as long as he, you know, continues to think he's ahead and he's winning and he's got it all and everything, I guess he's not gonna you know, concede to anything like that. But you know, who knows what might happen in these next few things. Again, you know, the people in Ohio were really, really put off by this NAFTA thing. And even though they're now trying to say, oh, it was the Clinton people that, you know, that said they were saying one thing and really thinking another. Well, number one, you can't trust what the Canadian government is saying anymore anyway.
Because they've got a conservative
PM. Oh, yeah. I mean,
it was
a real embarrassment to them, okay? But there is a memorandum written by you know, an official that said this guy Goolsbee, this Obama, and I'll be posting this tomorrow, so anybody wants to look it up, check me out tomorrow. Usually by 4 p.m. I'm done with my day's post. You know, I've got wording from that memorandum that specifically says, oh, yeah, well, you know, he's not, he's gonna de-emphasize any, you know, bad things about NAFTA or whatever and ongoing and stuff like that. So, you know, there's no question that Goolsbee did that. Now, and the difference here is that everybody assumes that Hillary Clinton is this two-faced, you know, backstabbing, you know, say one thing and do another kind of person, which I don't think is totally correct. But Obama was presented to us as this new kind of politician that doesn't lie to people and doesn't do one thing and say another and blah, 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 blah.
And that presentation, you know, has been part and parcel of the so-called professional media. You know, and I'm interested because of this poll that came out, Caro. Over half of the American people say they do not trust the press.
Yes.
I noticed that on your digest today.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't know. You know, back in the Walter Cronkite days, maybe, is what I'm thinking of when he was, you know, the person you turn to when Walter Cronkite said we'd lost the and when he said we'd lost the Vietnam War, by God, we'd lost the Vietnam War.
Yep.
Is Is this, I mean, is this something that maybe the media might actually pay attention to? Folks. Yeah, well, yeah, folks, they hate us.
No. No, not even declining readership, declining profits, declining subscriptions, declining advertising. None of that hits them at home either. You know, they look around and say, how can this be? You know, we're such good guys.
But we're professionals, and you know, we drink martinis, and we know which when to use the shrimp fork.
So no, they're not getting it.
And that nothing. This won't. It's the Pew Foundation. What do they know? You know, this is the same. This is the same outfit that told us the other day, last week, that lo and behold, Americans are getting fed up with fundamental religion. But that doesn't matter either. So, I don't know. I'm the 90% of the stuff that is flying back and forth between the Clinton and the Obama camps has been generated entirely by a ratings-oriented media.
Well, some of it has, but some of it has come from the campaigns as well. In other words, the campaigns are feeding some of the stuff to the media. And that's what they do. I just had a back and forth with one of the guys at McClatchy the other day, and he sent me something that was he said it was linked to the two campaigns radio or telephone conversations of that day with the media, and he said spin. He said this is the spin from the Obama camp, this has been from the Clinton camp. And I wrote back to him and I said, now, McClatchy is one of the few that has really been doing a good job all the way through the Bush administration, back when they were Knight Ridder, moving on to McClatchy. I mean, they have really been the skeptics, the ones that ask the questions. They ask the questions about the Iraq War that nobody wanted to answer and stuff like that. So I wrote back to him and I said, "Oh, thanks for this. I just wish I had the time to listen to stuff like that, but I just don't, you know." So I said, "Thanks for this." I said, "But seems to me it's the campaign's job to spin and the media's job to unspin, or to call them on it." You know, I said, "It's really a symbiotic relationship." He went back and he said, "It is." There's supposed to be this tension. There's supposed to be this, people fighting for what they believe and fighting for their candidate and stuff. That's what democracy is. It's messy. You know, Scalia wanted to end the mess in 2000. You know, that's too messy to have it go all the way to the House of Representatives like the Constitution says. Okay.
But we can take a little bit of respite, Caro, because right wing sleazebag Glenn Beck on Headline News the other night had Pastor John Hagee on, John Hagee, Catholic hater, and he did assure America that Barack Obama is not the Antichrist.
Oh, I'm so happy to know that.
Just makes sleeping all the more, yeah.
Now,
can't make this stuff up. I mean, why would you?
That's the kind of stuff that's going to. It's like in 2004, one of the things they were doing was in Mississippi, Alabama, places like that. They were saying, you know, you got to vote Republican because the Democrats, they'll take your Bibles away.
Oh, we got the memo here. Arkansas and West Virginia actually got the memo in 2004.
You know, those kinds of things. Those are the kinds of things that the Democrats are going to be fighting against in the general election. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, to the same extent that Roger Stone has that Citizens United Not Timid thing against Hillary. I recently found a right-wing Chicago sleaze merchant's website. I'm sure you know who Joe Novak is.
No, I don't.
He is an uber hateful right wing Chicago knife man, so to speak.
Really?
Yeah. And I won't give the website because I don't want it to get the traffic, but yeah. There is already a website out there with the same, and you know, these guys don't have new ideas, Caro. They just recycle.
They don't need new ideas.
So they have, there's already videos up, just vitriolically attacking, not Barack Obama. Oh no, you know, these aren't men. They can't go face to face. These are hateful, slimy attacks on Michelle Obama. And I did a little bit of research the other night and just sort of tried to find, you know, where's this stuff coming from? How is this stuff happening? And lo and behold, yeah, it's a guy named Joe Novak, and he is a poison merchant.
Yeah.
And he's already, you know, he's working up the machine to,
So for all of those people who said that they were in favor of Obama because they didn't want the divisiveness that would come along with a Clinton campaign, or a Clinton presidency, excuse me.
Yeah, and the thing is, with all the flack over the so-called darkened Obama picture, I now know where it came from. It came from this website.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if you go to it and you see it at the top, it's on the banner at the top. They've nappied up his hair and turned him to roughly the color of a coffee bean.
Well, I'm not sure I can imagine why the Clinton campaign would pick something from that website to.
I'm not saying that they did, but that's where this came from. Just as the business with the Drudge Report was picked up part and parcel and put forward as. The work of the Clinton campaign,
mm-hmm.
when even Drudge didn't say that. Let's send the two senators out for ice cream. It's time to start thinking about the good of the party. It's time to start thinking, okay, screw the party. It's time to start thinking about the good of the nation.
Well, but you see, you have two candidates, each of whom is strongly believes that he or she is, and his or her group of advisors are the best people for the nation and the best people to help solve the problems that are huge problems that are going to have to be solved following the Bush administration. And so each of them is fighting for what they think are the right things for the nation, and I think that's a good thing.
Because there is how do we begin to character? We have had 8 years, and I want to kind of, we've got a few minutes left, and I want to tie this into something that I did put forward last night, and it's about the single most paranoid moment I have ever had on the air, Caro. And that is that. Looking across the web at some websites that are making a fortune on hate, the one I'm thinking of offhand is making a fortune off of Hillary hate,
mm-hmm.
and it's a liberal website. It's a website that I've relied on for years.
Mm-hmm.
As I said last night, I applied that old Sherlock Holmes dictum that says, once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is most likely the truth.
Yes.
And I think, I don't think, I'm pretty sure I know, that there are some people out there who have made out pretty well over the last 8 years, of pointing out the failings and the disasters of the Bush administration.
Yes.
And, Caro, they can't do it by pointing out the successes of a Democratic administration.
Well,
and therefore they have a vested interest.
No.
A vested interest.
Oh, I see where you're talking about when the paranoia comes in.
In a McCain presidency.
Oh.
Because, you know, I mean,
lots more revenue.
Sure. And that's 4 or 8 more years of $30,000 a month.
Oh my.
And so, I don't like coming up with thoughts like this, but I've had this going through my head for about 2, 3, 4 weeks, and I've looked at, it's like a Rubik's Cube to me, and I keep, come on, it's not like that, Bob. No, it could, no, they wouldn't. But they, yes, people would. Would you, Would you trade $300,000 a year for a Democratic president?
No.
If you were, say, a big time radio host, and you knew that you were going to have to do nothing but sit for 3 hours a day and talk about how wonderful Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton was, and that your numbers were going to do the same thing that Rush Limbaugh's numbers and Hannity's numbers and all these creeps' numbers have done while they carried water for George Bush, would you want that to happen?
Gosh, crazy me. I have all of this time that I have been involved in politics since 2000, that was when I became radicalized by what I saw.
Oh, don't say radicalized, Caro. They'll accuse you of bombing the recruiting station in New York.
Okay. When I became political.
Okay, there we go.
It was to fight the right wing. Okay, it wasn't to make money. It was to fight the right wing. And I've been able to manage to eke, a little bit of money here and there, enough to get along all this time. And, you know, I can't see changing that, because the right wing is going to be there until we drive them back into the bottle.
Right. And frankly, from your perspective, you know, there's a significant focus on media at Make Them Accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to suddenly get all legitimate and decent and ethical just because a Democrat becomes president.
Absolutely. See, they
so your gig is okay.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
So, you know, you don't have to sit and quiver in fear at where your next $30,000 are coming from next month.
I see. Well, since I'm not getting $30,000 anyway,
well,
a year, much less.
Yeah, not a year, let alone a month.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't. That the hate is so loud and so boisterous from some of these camps, and there are some that are doing it from the Hillary side, and there are some that are doing it from the Barack side. And the only outcome of what they are all doing is that they make a McCain presidency a little more likely.
Well, again,
and then once that McCain presidency becomes a fact, a reality, they can breathe a huge sigh of relief and know that the gravy train is not going to stop running.
Well, I don't know. I'm just not sure that that's going to be the result, because what I am seeing as the result, even if you consider it infighting, and even if some of it is unfair and whatever, what I see is the American people engaged. Looking, interested. What's going on over there?
The engagement is very real, but it's the stuff that makes the diehard Hillary people and the diehard Obama people, the stuff that just makes their head explode, that is proving deleterious.
But what's the bad that's coming out of it? I mean, I see, higher recognition for Democrats. I see higher approval ratings over McCain for Democrats. I see interest from the American people. I see people finally starting to see what it is that Democrats believe in. I guess I'm not seeing the bad part.
I see all that as good too, but it's the stuff that's out there that is meant to be deliberately hurtful to one side or the other.
Okay. I do believe that there's some racism involved, and I do believe that there's some sexism involved in what's going on. And that's what I'm fighting!
You, me...
I've been fighting
right.
For 8 years!
You, me, and what I like to think the normal contingent.
Whether it comes from people who call themselves progressives, or whether it comes from people who... go to the Freeper website. You know, either one. I'm fighting them all.
And that's as much as we can hope for. It's as much as we can hope from anyone. Let me share one of these. Let me share one of these links. Okay.
Okay.
These links are set up, and it's a link to a story. but now we're getting full paragraphs. Will Hillary run as an independent as Joe Lieberman did? Because she's doing the work of the Republicans. I think that since we now know Senator McCain will be the nominee for the Republican Party, national security will be front and center in this election. We all know that, and I think it's... blah, 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 blah. And then, let's see, let's try another one just for the fun of it. Because there's a million of them. More despicable Rovian politics from the Clinton camp. Clinton aide compares Obama to Ken Starr. Typical Bush avoidance. And, you know... The spring before his wife began her White House campaign, former President Bill Clinton earned $700,000 for his foundation by selling stock that he had been given from an internet search company that was blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's every third or fourth link is one of these.
You have to think, though, that most Americans, when they look at that, they go, okay, so what? And if it's come to Rovian tactics, you better believe our candidate had better be familiar with Rovian tactics and figuring out how to use them.
And how to fight back, sure. Let's see, let's try another one on for size. All of Senator Hillary Clinton's warmed over Rovian fear-mongering for nothing. Obama, yeah. And let's see, there was even one of them that referred to her as a sleazy racist.
Now that kind of stuff really bothers me.
All coming.
But you know, as soon as I see sleazy in a title, I know where the sleaze is.
you're used to seeing that kind of thing.
Okay.
Senator Clinton, here's your real 3 a.m. call, and you're showing poor judgment. Oh God.
But that is what politics is all about, is, you know, misstating the position of the other guy. And
isn't that for the campaigns to do? I mean, this is we're talking here, Caro, about websites that have told America for 8 years now that they're defending democracy.
Yeah, I know, but I can...
You'll note I'm not naming names.
I know, and I know who you're talking about, too. But I just don't think that they're doing as much good as they think they're doing in sliming these people. See, because...
But that's my thesis, Kara.
But this is what happens, is I've told you this before, I was an Edwards supporter. And when Edwards dropped out, I said, oh, okay, there are two candidates left. I looked at their records. I kind of knew Obama's anyway. Clinton's been around long enough. I knew what she was about. They're both pro-war. They're both pro-corporate. So I'm looking at this. I said, well, okay. And then I looked at their platforms. And Clinton's is the more progressive of the platforms, okay? So I said, okay, that's who I'll vote for. And, you know, no big deal. That's pretty dispassionate, I thought, in the process. Then... Hillary Clinton started getting attacked. Like, she doesn't have any experience. And, a lot of the message groups, they were saying, President Clinton's wife this, President Clinton's wife that. You know, well, you talk about getting my Irish up. There ain't much Irish blood in me, but what it is really, could get really hot, okay? my feminist hackles were raised, and I became an absolutely radical Clinton supporter. Okay, so that's what they do when they unfairly attack somebody. They simply, you know, get retaliation from people who believe differently. So, you know, whether it all balances out, I don't know, but I can tell you that for a while there on Daily Coast and Democratic Underground, anybody who had any halfway cross word to say about Obama was beaten into the ground.
Yeah.
And that has changed considerably.
Just because a bigger groundswell, or
more people said, "Well, gee, that's not fair. I'm going to get in here and I'm going to fight for Hillary." You know.
Yeah.
So these people who go too far in one direction or another, It's like that old war horse Carvel has said, you know, when somebody's doing something really mean or nasty, he says, tell them to keep it up. Tell them to do more of it. Keep talking like that, Hagee. Keep talking about how bad and nasty Catholics are and how much you like John McCain. Keep doing that. Because people react negatively to it. They don't say, oh, I'm going to go with that candidate because he's supported by a guy that hates Catholics. You know, they don't do that. They say, oh, I don't like that candidate because, you know, you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. just don't be surprised. Well, no, I can't even countenance the thought. I'm at that place. I cannot even countenance a thought, Carolyn, of a McCain president.
I'm with you 150%, and that is why I, you know, have fought so strongly for the candidate that I believe is better prepared to win against the guy, to win against every conceivable organ of government that is going to be put in his, you know, to help him get elected. And I honestly think, you know, call me tinfoil hat territory, but I honestly think Rove is behind him because, as I've said before, George Bush has got to keep his butt out of jail.
Oh, I think it goes without saying that Karl Rove is not off somewhere, you know, pulling on his his support hose and eating his fruit cocktail.
He's not lollygagging.
No, not in the least. Hey, Caro, it's been a wonderful hour again. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right.
I hope we'll do this next week.
We sure will. Take care, Caro.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. It's a wonderful digest of information on a daily basis, which, you know, it's getting harder to find information that's not politically or not advocacy oriented from one candidate to the other, and that's there's still real news going on out there. Shh, don't tell Obama and Hillary. There really, really is. We'll come back and take your calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, in just a couple of minutes, hour 2. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
That is my story, and I am going to stick to it. I can't come up with a better reason. I can't come up with a better reason for spreading discord inside the Democratic Party with only seven primaries remaining, apart from a genuine desire on the part of some people to keep the lobster dinners flowing. I'm willing to be proven wrong, but I'm not gonna turn away from a viable theory just because it seems unpalatable. No way. Let's go to the phones. Gene is calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Got a quick question for you.
Okay.
This idea that you got, which I instantly agree with, but you just shared it with Carol, and have you shared it with any of the blogs that you think actually are practicing it?
No.
Okay.
I'm not. I mean, why would I tell one of these outfits that we've seen behind the curtain?
Well, I suppose the reason I would say, if you get a reaction like, "God, you're a communist," which, from their point of view, you might very well be, then you know your theory was right.
Well, that's a thought.
I mean,
I can think of other responses I would likely get.
I know, but I mean, you might get different.
Crazy, paranoid, conspiracy theorist, you know.
Yeah, but, all right, maybe communist is a little bit extreme, but, you know, it's kind of headed that way. It's like, if you have any real honest left intentions anymore, even if you happen to tolerate capitalism, you're automatically labeled like a far left wing communist nut or something like this. And I just because I agree with you on that, and it really I've been thinking about this kind of thing for a long time, and I don't want to be a pessimist, but it's like I look at it.
So I'm not the only one seeing this.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been sort of swirling around in your brain too, Gene. I mean,
oh yeah, I've looked at this, and it's like, in fact, when I've always looked at this, and I said, okay, what if we're doing all this, and we're all being kind of, well, no offense, not necessarily you, but what if we're all being taken for a ride? I mean, we put our hope into something.
Well, we're playing in the political sandbox. By definition, Gene, we're being taken for a ride because all of the candidates are human and as such are flawed.
Yeah, I know that, but I mean, it's like at least before the current political cycle, at least they tried to keep some of their promises, even if they couldn't, you know. And I'm so cynical anymore. The only liberal talk radio I really listen to anymore is Head On. Because, I mean, I was listening to Harmon the other day, and he happened to be going on a riff, an anti-atheist riff, and it's like, geez.
Hartman? You know, anti-atheist?
Well, he had some guy on there said had a book that was, I Don't Believe in Atheists, and, he was kind of agreeing with the author, because Tom is a liberal Christian, and I didn't catch the whole thing. It was like, you know, because I look at this whole.
It's getting to where there's two places with any sanity left in it on the radio, and that's The Horn and Malloy.
Yeah, I almost can't listen to, you know, I don't even try to listen to AAR anymore. I mean, when I woke up this morning and I had some free time, I debated and I said, no, I'm not going to turn Hartman on. It's just, yeah. I mean, he makes good sense to a point, but it's like, where's the rest of this? Why aren't you going?
But see Hartman. I mean, Hartman is a pro, and he'll have stuff to talk about if a Democrat wins the presidency.
I know. I'm sure Tom will.
Yeah.
I mean,
Tom will. Stephanie will. I don't know what happens to Ed Schultz, because I don't think he's a liberal in the first place.
No.
And I know, you know, Malloy's been at this since 1987, 86 or something, you know. So, you know, he's got the track record to prove that he can adapt.
I always figured there's plenty of stuff to continue to talk about once we get a Democrat president in.
Right, because, you know, it's not like suddenly the environment's going to get cleaned up. It's not like suddenly the mountains are going to stop being blown to smithereens. It's going to take work.
And unless we keep the pressure up, it might not be, even with a Democratic president, we might not get some real action on uncovering what the heck all the Republicans did. I mean, we can't just... I mean,
I don't know what to make of Obama swanning around with Jay Rockefeller. Here's a guy who wants to give telecoms immunity, and a guy who thinks that there's no the only good mountain's a blown-up mountain, as long as they're not blowing them up near his compound in Pocahontas County.
Yeah.
And he's running around with a guy who's talking about change. And so in his presence, Obama says he wants Appalachia to turn into the Saudi Arabia of coal?
Ow, I didn't hear that, but...
Yeah, I got that from somebody who heard it said.
Ooh.
And that just, you know, I don't even have to put the finger down my throat, Gene. It's like, bleh! Oh.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's weird because you're...
Has Barack Obama seen Saudi Arabia lately? It's really nowhere you'd want to live.
Well, I agree. Of course, if I were a right wing Republican, I'd say, well, you're a Muslim after all. You must have seen Saudi Arabia at least once.
Oh God! Oh God, Gene.
That's a bad.
I mean, well, no, it's making it more and more difficult for me. You know, meanwhile, Hillary Clinton gets a B+. From the coal industry for her future plans for our hills.
I know.
And I can't sit this one out because I know how important it is to have a Democrat of some form in the White House.
Oh, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, my God. I mean, if you look at it from the Republicans' point of view, it'd be better for them if we had a Democrat in the office. I mean, my God, could you imagine... If you get McCain in there and then you get Huckabee as his second, I mean, let's face it, after that runs all done, Christianity is doomed. If I were a Christian, my Huckabee would be the last person I wanted.
Oh, Lord, Lord. Hey, Gene, good talking to you, brother. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, how true. How very, very true. It'll be a McCain-Huckabee the ticket will be the end of Christianity in America. let's keep it rolling. I think this is Kevin.
Hey Bob.
Hey Kevin, what's happening, brother?
Nothing much. You know, I just wonder, like, while McCain is sitting out laughing at the Democrats basically slogging each other stupid, you know, and how much money is being hemorrhaged out on this primary. You know, you have to wonder.
Yeah. Well, McCain has his own money problems, too, though, because there's that whole dust-up over him, you know, cheating with the Federal Election Commission. It remains to be seen whether or not he'll actually get busted for it.
Well, the thing is, how the right wing operates is that, remember what you said, it's about what sticks, and it probably won't.
Yeah, I know. That's why we've got to throw the kitchen sink at him.
You know, but Barack Obama raised $50 million last month, and it's like...
55, actually, I think.
Oh, sorry.
55 to Hillary's 33 or 36.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, why can't they just realize both of them... Okay, I know both of them have extremely large egos, and it's just like, merge, pool our resources... It's not about, you know, whatever, but it's about not producing another Bush-like presidency.
No, it's going to be worse than Bush. That's the thing. This is the slide. This is the slippery downslope of Republican incompetence, Kevin. If we get 4 or 8 years of John McCain, and please understand that this is sitting in my mouth like a green persimmon. You ever bite into a green persimmon? It's not fun. Turns your mouth inside out.
Right.
But at the end of 4 or 8 years of John McCain, we will look fondly back on the Bush presidency.
Oh yeah, well it goes back to Tiberius going to Caligula because Tiberius wanted to be loved in the end.
It's like Louis the 15th. It's like George Bush's Louis the 15th saying "Après moi le déluge," you know, after me the flood.
Yeah, that's it.
So you know, I there's 7 primaries left. Let the candidates win those on their merits, and not on their ability to create hatred.
Well, that's what they're doing, and it's just become so predatory. And you know, it's a very, and a lot of this again goes back to the Nixon administration or the Reagan administration, where it's like the bottom has fallen out. Where they deregulated businesses and deregulated our political process to the point where our whole culture is predatory.
Yeah, let's not say. How about cannibalistic?
That too. Well, it's along the same lines. You know, it's like I'm looking at it. It's like we have a nation full of amaurosis from.
Yeah.
And you know, to me, she's a piranha.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I can describe her as. And you know, okay, as you know, I'm teaching, and I even see them in our kids.
How so?
They're extremely, and you know, but I don't blame the kids. I just blame the examples they look to. They're very vicious, and you know, like they're using the whole "don't touch me" thing as a get out of jail free card.
Sure.
He touched me. The teacher touched me. As a get out of jail free.
Yeah, that's why you don't have the doors always remain open.
Oh yeah, but you see the
and there's always a witness.
Yeah, and the problem is with that is that the classroom. Are so noisy because they don't want to learn anything.
It sounds like you're becoming a little bit jaded pretty quick there, Kevin.
Oh, yes, I am. And, you know, I am thinking about selling out and teaching in the private school, unfortunately. You know, I am because, you know.
Oh, yeah, teach the kids that already got thrown out of the public schools. That's a step up.
No, well, in the Northeast, private schools are people who pay good money.
Oh, okay.
To send their kids. You know, I don't know how it is in other regions.
Yeah. The upscale. But then again, those are just, you're switching to slightly better heeled brats.
But you see, the thing is, the difference is, and as much as I don't like Giuliani, I will always have a soft spot for him because Giuliani knew what a lot of people didn't know, nothing gets done. Order.
Yeah.
All the wonderful things that, you know, the great society, and I believe in the great society. Okay?
Yeah.
I truly, but it cannot be achieved without a certain level of order.
I can dig that, sure.
Okay. And that's why, as much as I dislike Giuliani and, you know, what he's become into, Giuliani saw that about New York City.
Yeah, but he imposed it at a great cost. Because the cost had names like Abner Louima and Amadou Diallo.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, that's, you know, that was a great cost. But the thing is, New York would not be what it is today without the Giuliani mayorship.
Yeah.
And,
is it a better New York than, is it a better Brooklyn than the Brooklyn you grew up in?
Oh, yeah. Much. you know, the schools still need a lot of work, because, and the thing is, the schools are, is what it is, where the thing is, it's like, the, again, you know, you have a lot of dysfunctioning families, or products of dysfunctioning families occupying the schools.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, New York City as a whole is much better. Even the outer boroughs, you know, there was a time when yellow taxis didn't go to the outer boroughs.
Sometimes I feel like Sergeant York out of that old Gary Cooper movie where, you know, he gets home and he just wants to go and see New York City. I am such a hillbilly. I gotta get up there and see the place someday.
Yeah, well, you drive it. It's only 8 hours. Or your part of West Virginia.
Me drive in New York. Yeah, that's gonna happen. I'll park in New Jersey and hike.
Yeah. But it, you know, it's just, I think it, we've, the whole political process, we've become so predatory, and you know, the whole political and economic process, we've become extremely predatory as a people. And you know, one last point I wanted to make: when I was going to school as a kid, because of the let's say the much greater social safety net, which Reagan so destroyed, there was a group of women, you know, PTA,
mm-hmm.
and they were all, quote-unquote, what Reagan would call welfare queens, which they weren't, because...
I hate that term.
Yeah, but they ran that school. They always kept in touch with the parents and made sort of school, you know, did the reach-out programs. And these were women who didn't work. Most of them were single moms who were on public assistance.
And they were finding a way to try to do something within the community.
Exactly. And you know, one thing about teaching brings back a lot of your childhood back to you, especially when you teach an area that you grew up in. You know, and these are people who did not work or have any steady income, but... they have made such an impact in the school and in the community at large. And again, these were women who were on some form of public assistance. And I noticed, like in the 80s, when the Reagan presidency kicked in, all of that disappeared. All that so-called volunteerism disappeared.
And was it just a vacuum?
Yeah, because it's like what happens was once they lost that safety net or what have you, they were, people just basically got into survival mode. And survival is basically, you know, I have to look out for self at all costs.
Yeah. Just, pure me-ism.
Yeah. And, you know, that plus add, you know, the materialism of one having to have the latest iPod and DVD player, and, you know, look what we have today.
It's kind of grim.
Yeah.
It is. Well, Kevin, have yourself a great weekend, brother.
I'll try.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to leave on a...
It's not anything that a 12-ounce curl can't cure.
Oh, of course.
Kevin, take it easy, brother.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And rolling on, you know the number, 304-658-3333, 877-443-2366. Jump in line. Hi, who I got?
Hey, how you doing, Bob? It's Gary.
Hey, Gary, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Making it through. You know, facing a weekend. Two lonely days of having to keep my mouth shut.
It's like raining here in D.C.
I just got a weather update that there's probably ice heading my way. Oh, joy. That means I have to go out, make sure the gas cans are full, and crank up the generator.
I've been calling the DNC, trying to get through to Howard Dean, you know, because you know where I'm at on the positions and stuff. But I've really been trying to call the DNC and tell both of these candidates, this is, you know what my position is on this. Is to stop this, because I'm running into so many people. First, it was from one side, say they're not going to vote for this candidate. Now I'm seeing it from both sides.
Yeah, it's It's getting, it's got, it, it's bad. It was bad, and it's getting worse.
It's out of control now. I mean, you know, I'm a Obama supporter, obviously, but I, you know, but you got to have some respect for the other side, and I really think it's getting to the point now where people are just saying on both sides that they're just not going to vote either candidate, you know, and it's, and I really kind of disappointed DNC because it seemed to me, Bob, they should just tell the candidates, look, the next person that comes out with anything that pretty much, you know, is overly negative. I mean, it has, you can, as long as it's off, not off policy, if, you know, if the one person has them, but if it goes anything personal, if it's anything really just unfair, that the superdelegates or some kind of system, they're going to be penalized. And I think if they did that, that would stop all of this.
Well, you know, two cases in point. You've got the Obama surrogate, and frankly, what, 99% of this problem is created by the surrogates, don't you think?
Both sides.
Yeah, on both sides. You got the Obama surrogate who referred to Hillary as a monster.
Yep.
And then you've got Howard Wolfson on Hillary's side who referred to Obama as Ken Starr. So, Lord, and that's the thing, Gary. There's only 7 primaries left. What is the purpose of this in 7 primaries when we know that mathematically a sweep by either one does not sweep them into the nomination?
Yeah, maybe the solution really is to just, I wish Gore would just step in and just say, enough, both of you guys are out, and, you know, superdelegates just decide we're going to put, you know, this guy in, just, you know, maybe handle it that way. But this,
oh Lord, no, Gary, because then the Hillary people and the Obama people would stomp away pissed off, and that'd just leave people like me who think it would be great to have an Al Gore presidency be the only, you know, we'd be the only happy people in America.
Yeah, I have no problem with Al Gore presidency. President. He was like
me either.
Really, my top candidate. You know, I mean, next, ask them, I mean, Dennis Kucinich first.
But, you know, I look at what's going on here, and I can't help but wonder if Al Gore, I don't wonder, I know, Al Gore's the smartest guy in the room. He knows where American politics is now.
That's why, this is why I really felt like he didn't want to run, because he looked at this, he saw what would happen when he went through this whole thing with George Bush, and he said, look, Washington is ugly, I don't want to deal with it. I think he just decided to stay away. This thing now is just so out of control. And, you know, we can sit here and talk all this other stuff, but we might as well start to say soon, you know, John McCain for President of the United States. I mean, I really don't think this long-term fight is actually beneficial, and I don't really buy into the thing about toughening up a candidate. I think you do damage at some point where it becomes unrepairable.
Well, look, but the other thing that was brought out, though, Gary, look at the money this is costing. This is war chest stuff that could be spent in the general election. Again, there's only 7 states left. It's not a week before Super Tuesday. I mean, and those 7 states are places like Mississippi and West Virginia and Kentucky.
Yeah, that's why I said they should just clean this up now and just, like you said, let the voters vote, and then after that you make a decision based on whatever. But it seems to me, however this solution comes, it seems like it's not, one party is going to say, oh, it's not fair to them, or the other party is going to say it's not fair to them. So I don't know. Maybe we just have to have some kind of crazy runoff.
Well, that's what the convention will be.
Well, I hope we can get to the convention, Bob. I don't know.
barring anything, barring something incredibly stupid by George Bush, August will get here. Then again, sometimes that feels like a bit of a big bet. Because, I mean, you know, with this, the story of the bombing, the so-called military recruiting center bombing, you know that thing's going to get legs. And you know that this kind of fear-mongering and terror-mongering is going to only get ratcheted up and up and up and up as we get nearer. I wouldn't be surprised if John McCain personally claims to have captured Osama bin Laden the night that we nominate whoever we nominate. That's the way these sleazy SOBs operate, Gary.
Yeah, no. I mean, you try to, you know, like I say, you try to rise above politics, but when it all comes down to it, it's all personal vanity. And, you know, while all of this is going on, you know, it's like I was telling somebody the other day, I said, if Hillary Clinton and Obama saw a young girl or a baby drowning in the water, would they stop that baby in the water is America.
Yeah.
Like they're not seeing the baby in the water, you know. Like, guys, just start focusing on the issues, present your, you know, ideas, and let the people decide.
Yeah, and let those of us who get the big picture get busy on the business of opposing John McCain. I mean, this guy's creepy. I've got a thing from over at Think Progress, Gary, where there's the guy who was in charge of training the Iraqi troops for a year and a half or 2 years, you know, real live, honest to God military, you know. And he says that John McCain scares him. I mean, it's like let me see if I can find this quote real quick, because this will just blow you away. He's talking about McCain's character, and he says that here it is, I think. Nope, that's the wrong one. Well, he says that it's like reading someone describing George Bush. Because he says, where John McCain is concerned, there is no other opinion, and he will brook no dissent. That is not, that's not inspiring, and that doesn't, and it's also not, what, it doesn't put me at ease for things like, you know, nuclear war over Iran.
Well, I heard I didn't see it, but I think I saw a newsflash where he blew up today, that little famous temper of his.
He blew up at a New York Times reporter.
For what? What happened?
What was it? I had it here. He had a hissy on a reporter who asked him, you know, a question. Because the thing is, he's very much like George Bush. He can't stand to have a McCain decision questioned. Yeah, this guy is a real danger to America.
Yeah, it seems like he's a little emotionally unstable. I don't know if we don't need that right now, you know.
No.
Hot hit. Because he's going to be faced with some really hard questions and some hard problems. Really do need somebody who knows something about it, economics, you know. Because what's going to happen?
Well, that ain't John McCain.
Well, the thing with McCain would be interesting. And I know I counter, you know, this whole, you know, New York Times thing that came out on him. It's like really what they were trying to do was expose his ties to all these lobbyists. I mean, you know, he has a very strange political background. I'll be honest, I'm kind of a little naive on his background. From some of the stuff I've been reading in the New York Times, he really is in the pocket of, like, he is like the lobster. I mean, he is really is Washington to the core, if you really want to think about it. It seems like this guy is totally bought and paid for. And that is scary to me, just totally frightening. Because that tells me he's going to be totally out of touch with the people when he gets in at the worst possible time. When we need a president who feels the pain of the people, we're going to put this guy in? God.
Yeah.
God. All right, man, but I'm not in a good mood tonight, man. So
I'm sorry, Gary. I don't mean to put
you... No, I just, you know, this whole thing's going on. I'm already getting visions of John McCain in office. And, you know, 8 years of Bush...
Don't forget. 1 year in, you get to stop saying President McCain, and you start saying President Huckabee.
I almost want to say I would go with Huckabee over McCain. I just, at least I've heard, you know, that he's at least somewhat compassionate toward people.
Oh, but we've sung that song too, haven't we?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But he actually has shown it to some degree, though, with the Louisiana people who came there. I have friends who went to Arkansas. He said he really opened up, like, stops. But, you know, it helped them out. But I've heard comments that he's made, and he's really another one of those evangelical nutheads. So, I mean, you know, you can't trust him either, because at some point you never know when his God or his point of view on God takes over reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't know where God starts and reality ends.
Yeah, because God, you know, if you believe in God, like, you know, I do believe in God in certain things. I believe that God is part of our reality. I don't make a, you know, I don't make a distinction between the two.
I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's some, you know, old bearded guy in the sky.
I don't believe in that.
But I think that, you know, there's some sort of energy in the universe. There's no getting around it. I mean,
I think God is more abstract.
Yeah.
The way I think about it is more abstract.
Precisely. Well, Gary, try to have a better weekend. I hope I didn't start it off on too entirely rotten a foot.
No. Okay.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye. And onward we go. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, thanks.
Sorry you had to wait so long, but I take them in the order they come, so, yeah.
It was my pleasure, really. I've just really been enjoying the dialogue. So valuable. And I was thinking about, was it Carolyn Kay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Her experience with some of the blogs, the Hillary hate blogs and other things that we're hearing on the radio. And again, I think there are very serious criticisms of her and people around her. Recently, she made a comment about the retreat of democracy in Latin America and implied that Hugo Chavez...
I've got comments that she and Obama made about the whole Venezuela, Ecuador, Colombia mess that just gave me a case of the wood alcohol shivers.
Exactly. And again, those more major problems are probably reflected by both the candidates and I think reflected by our society as a whole. I mean, we keep expecting our leaders to, advocate a certain way or support certain causes when so often we're not doing that ourselves in our own lives. Of course, with many exceptions, like this media effort that you've created and people around you have supported.
But I think, Preston, that at the end of the day, maybe we as liberals, progressives, have to sit back. I mean, because, we are the smartest ones in the bunch, quite honestly. And, I mean, I'm not saying that to be a smartass. I think we tend to think things through a little bit more deeply than your average centrist or God knows so-called conservative.
Well,
and we have to come to a place where we realize that we're probably better on the issues than the candidates running. And we are that way because of the amount of filthy money that's in the process.
Right.
You can take someone with good intentions, and those good intentions go straight down the toilet the minute that the PAC money starts rolling in.
Right. Or the minute that the larger media starts taking over the narratives and the perceptions of the campaign and what the issues are around it. And, yeah. And so many compromises people feel pressured to make regarding, the pressure that big business puts on people. I mean, it was about 60 years ago where big business attempted a flat-out coup, tried to overthrow FDR administration. And it was people like General Smedley Butler who, talk about serving your country, fighting for your country.
Yeah.
That was an internal threat.
And then comes out and not only pulls the curtain back, but yanks the curtain down and burns it and pens that stunning piece, War is a Racket.
Yep.
I mean, and the thing that's getting to me is that every time I think I'm close to making a decision one way or the other, Preston, there's another little piece of information that comes out that makes me want to look, take a second look. For instance, Mark Levine has... he proudly announced that he was voting for Obama in the Virginia primary, and he did so. He's also consistently stated that he'd be happy voting for either person as president as compared to John McCain.
Yeah.
One of the things that drives Mark Levine, I don't mean to be speaking for him, but it drives him, the telecom immunity thing just makes Mark Levine want to just beat his head into a wall. And lo and behold, I'm looking at a story here, and, this isn't the liberal media, okay? I mean, actually, it is the liberal media because it's coming from a liberal website. But Barack Obama has routinely and consistently spoken out, and he even voted against granting retroactive immunity for the telecoms, right? I mean, we talked about it on this program. I was kind of proud of him for it. Yay, go you. Well, lo and behold, it turns out that he's got an advisor by the name of John Brennan. And I guess you can't run for president without having 9 dozen advisors.
Right.
But one of his advisors is John Brennan, and John Brennan is a former CIA official He's current chairman of the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. And he just wrote a, or he just gave an interview to the National Journal. This is what he said. There is this great debate over whether or not the telecom companies should in fact be given immunity for their agreement to provide support and cooperate with the government after 9/11. Well, he's lying already. I do believe strongly that they should be granted that immunity. I do believe the Senate version of the FISA bill addresses the issues appropriately.
Yeah.
Why is this guy on Obama's staff?
Yeah. Where did you find this article?
This is at Think Progress.
Think Progress. Okay. I'll check that out. And I know Obama on the coal issue. I guess he's been supportive of that coal to liquid fuel proposal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, he was, I think it was in Ohio over the past weekend, where in the company of Jay Rockefeller, and I know this is the third time I've mentioned it because it's one of those things that just makes my eyes bug out and roll back in my head. He said he wants Appalachia, Preston, to be the Saudi Arabia of coal.
Obama said that?
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
I mean, that meant, for me, living here and
turn
my,
it into a desert, I guess.
Right. A bleak, barren, dead place.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine let's see. I think Nanette is in the chat room, and she lives down in the Coal River Valley. And I can't imagine that our good friends Bo Webb or Judy Bonds or Janice Neese or any of the people who are associated with this fight would see something like that and not just start spontaneously screaming.
Mm-hmm.
The Saudi Arabia of coal?
Mm-hmm. I connected with a wonderful grassroots media project called TUC Radio a few months ago. I hear her program on a community radio station here in Colorado, but lately I've been missing her programs, and recently she had a program regarding a presentation by some people with Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, I think it's called.
Great organization.
Oh, you know it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And they had brought some speakers out to California to share their story, and this woman recorded it, and that's her radio program. Anyway, I checked that out, and just moving people. I don't remember their names offhand, but one person made a comment. She was, you know, just gathering information in her community, and she had come across, she said, an old timer who said that, you know, what they're replanting, the destroyed mountaintops, you know, they say they do this recovery or whatever that term is.
Yeah, reclamation.
Huh? Reclamation, right. They're planting these, she mentioned a Chinese plant that's completely, you know, foreign to the area. It does not work. You know, the other animals don't eat it. They shy away from it. So it's like starving the animals or taking this food security away from them. And this old timer said to her, you know, if a deer wanted to cross these reclaimed mountains, that deer would have to pack a lunch.
Yeah, that's actually an old saying. It's usually either a deer or a crow.
Okay.
And it's true. And the thing is, you know, that's so ecologically dumb to begin with, even outside the reclamation argument. You know, drive through the deep south and you'll see a little something, Preston, called kudzu.
Yeah, I know that stuff.
And that's a fairly innocuous plant where it comes from. It's Japanese.
Okay.
And in fact, I believe kudzu root is a starchy root, and it's a food source, food staple.
Well, interesting. Maybe we could use it as a biofuel.
Maybe God knows if we started harvesting now, we would probably be able to turn. Yeah, no kidding. Because it'll grow on a rock.
Yeah.
And it has taken the South. And the thing is, it was brought to the southern United States with the best of intentions, Preston.
Mm-hmm.
It was brought to the southern United States for purposes of curbing erosion. because the South had been so thoroughly clear-cut that the same thing happens whenever you deforest anywhere. The dirt goes away, and, you know, you've got these rain-washed arroyos and gullies and moonscapes. And the thing is, well, it did what it was. It held the soil in place where it was put, but then it didn't want to stay where it was put.
Mm-hmm.
Up here in West Virginia, we have something called multiflora rose, and that was brought by the USDA from the High Plains and the Upper West in the 1950s to West Virginia, and the USDA touted it to farmers here as, quote-unquote, the living fence row. Now, if you live in a place where everything's nice and flat and it's high plains, you know, multiflora rose is great because you can sort of keep it back, and it's a living fence row.
Wow.
On the other hand, if you put it in a place like West Virginia, it takes the place, and you can't get to it to manage it.
Okay.
And I've seen people chop it down, dig out the roots, pour gasoline in the hole, and it comes back. I've seen goats walk away from it. They can't eat it. It's so spiny.
You know, there are people here who are working, speaking of the plains, who are working to bring back native grasses and to take down some of these old rusty fences that birds and other animals keep getting stuck in and dying. And they want to kind of reclaim the plains and even bring back buffalo again.
Native grasses, it may sound sort of prosaic and minuscule, but that is so important, Preston, because the grasses are the source material and source foods for the native species. And just as those animals won't eat that weird extra continental stuff that's being planted on the mountaintop removal jobs, so too, by replacing one grass with another, you directly impact the carrying capacity of a given piece of land for the natural fauna that live on it. I think, and then there's, you know, in terms of speaking of fauna, there's stuff like the nutria. You ever heard of a nutria?
No.
A nutria is a giant rat.
Okay.
And it was introduced into the bayous of the Gulf Coast. For, oh God, I can't remember why they introduced it. It's, you know, the same reason, you know, snakes were introduced to Hawaii to keep down the rabbits. Then they introduced the mongooses to keep down the snakes, and, you know,
yeah.
And you know, what's the cheese going to want? but these things are an absolute blight to southern bayou systems, and no kidding, they are giant rats, and they have orange teeth, and they can't do anything about them.
Do people hunt them, eat them?
Some of the old time bayou guys do.
Okay, yeah.
But it's not like the happening restaurant in New Orleans, you know, Commander's Palace or Emeralds or anything. Big old plate of rat. Hey, Gramp, what's for supper? No.
Right.
And I think some are taken for their pelts and things like that. But you know, then again, it's the same problem we run into on our side of the debate. Anytime we're talking about living things, if you start, you know, you start aggressively, and I think it's open season on nutria in Louisiana. But PETA, meanwhile, is pissed off because they're using inhumane traps. There are foreign introduced water plants that if it shows up so much in a corner of a lake, they've got a real problem with it in Texas. The whole lake will be choked with this stuff in a matter of weeks.
Do you happen to know, are there more humane traps? I actually recently had a couple mice in my apartment. Actually, it was like 3 years ago, and I found these little traps where they went in the box, and the door closed behind them.
Yeah, the door closes behind them, and it tips up so that they can't get up the little ramp.
Yeah.
I've seen those. Although, I gotta tell you, if you're trapping these things for their pelts and you intend to kill them in the long run,
isn't there a little
philosophical disconnect? And you know, when you consider the way that rats and mice carry disease and what goes on with their feces and everything, you know what I'm saying?
I sure do.
Because I don't want to turn them loose in the wild.
Yeah, right.
I'll set a spider outside. I really do that.
And
who knows, maybe they can build a better mousetrap or a better nutria trap.
I'm in the middle of reading Jared Diamond's Collapse still.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're so used to thinking in terms of what Western European and, you know, generally white people have done to the planet. It's fascinating when you see what happened during the Polynesian expansion.
Okay.
Because it turns, it starts out over in more or less, New Guinea, the islands there that are close to Australia and Indonesia and Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And they move across into the Society Islands and the Marquesas, and eventually you wind up at Pitcairn and Easter Island. And lo and behold, it's simply archaeologically provable, none of those islands had rats on them before human beings came to them.
Hmm.
And in every instance, the rats got to the islands by stowing away in the canoes of the Polynesian seafarers. These are canoes. How do you not know you've got a rat on your canoe?
That's how a lot of organism migrations taking place today with fish and bacteria and stuff getting into the, was it the bilge of a ship or something like that?
And the migration, I think it's just called a brown snake.
Okay.
That is going all over Polynesia and the Asian Pacific Rim, and these things are vicious. And what they do is they stow away on things like aircraft.
Oh wow.
And
planes.
Oh, no kidding. I hadn't thought about that. But when they get to where they're going, they crawl, because they're seeking warmth, they crawl into things like transformer boxes and take out entire neighborhoods' electrical power.
Oh jeez.
So, you know, let's for all the intelligence of the human animal, sometimes I mean, how do you not throw the rat off the canoe?
I don't know, but before we get away from rats and stuff like that, I actually saw a documentary called Varmints, and it's about prairie dogs and the efforts to kind of exterminate them in areas. And it's very interesting the way in which the arguments almost parallel, you know, kind of any sort of negative campaign, the way the animals are talked about and the rationales that are built up. And one lady who studied them actually found out that they have kind of a language between them. And one of them is they have a particular squeak that they'll do if they see a person. And then they have another squeak that they'll do if they see a person with a gun. And these guys called varmint hunters go and they just drink beer and shoot these things and...
Hot dang, let's get liquored up and kill stuff.
And just, the goal is just to blow them up, vaporize them. You know, so they're not even using the pelt. They're not using the meat.
There's not much to a prairie dog pelt.
You know, I'm sure someone could do something with it, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's around these parts, in the fall, before rifle season starts for the deer, folks will often... make sure that their aim is still good by going out and shooting groundhogs.
Okay.
Because, you know, the guys who run cattle don't like them because they make holes in the ground, cattle step in the holes, cattle break ankles, boom, there goes, yeah.
This documentary, and I may be wrong, you probably know more about this issue than I do, but they spoke with some wildlife managers who had been out in the plains for decades, and they're like, I've never seen a cow break its leg. In fact, the cows, they seem to have some sort of relationship with these communities, the prairie dog communities, because the prairie dogs mulch the grass in a particular way, leave their enzymes in it, then the cows pick it up from there.
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that's what I always heard from the farmers around here. I've never raised a cow or had to worry about groundhogs. Okay. I have eaten groundhog by choice. You know, to say I had, not twice, not unless starving. They're kind of greasy.
Okay.
But
I had snake one time.
Yeah. Oh, I've had rattlesnake. I've had groundhog. I've had alligator. Let's see what. Yeah. Crawfish. You know, you put it in front of me, I'll generally eat it.
Me too. Me too. You know, before I let you go, and I know you have other callers, and I want to hear what they're thinking tonight, but one thing I wanted to read positive about Hillary Clinton that I found recently on Wikipedia. Just one little segment where she said, it says, she began a year of postgraduate study on children and medicine at the Yale Child Study Center. Her first scholarly article, Children Under the Law, was published in the Harvard Educational Review in late 1973. Discussing the new children's rights movement, it stated that child citizens were, quote, powerless individuals, and argued that children should not be considered incompetent from birth, but rather courts should presume competence and that these children can have rights. She ended up changing the law of this country by giving them protection because she had this experience of going to the homes of kids who were having, you know, cigarette butts used on them, not fed for 2 weeks, and she'd come home sobbing, and changed the rule nationally and has provided all this care through the law for children.
See, that's the thing. That is a positive thing, and I don't think there's any challenging her cred on where children are concerned.
I agree. And
my faulting of both Obama and Hillary comes not from who they basically are, but what has been done to them by virtue of the political process. Does that make any sense?
Yes, absolutely. And done to all of us in one way or another. I think we all kind of, you know, get perverted or corrupted along the way, or we take jobs because we've got to pay our bills, or we feel pressure, or we keep our mouth shut at the job because we don't want to get fired, and da-da-da-da-da. We know that space that she's in, and that Obama, that the ways in which we're limited in some ways. But interestingly, she also said, and she spoke, I'll leave you with this last comment from her, and I found this in a book called The War on Choice regarding, reproductive rights. And she makes this comment about social movements and reactions against them. And she addresses it regarding a women's issue, but I think it applies to social movements generally. And she said, there's nothing new about this backlash. It's human nature that when the established order has been changed, there will be a reaction, and the magnitude of this reaction shouldn't surprise us. The advancement of women in the last 50 years has been breathtaking. There has been no comparable advancement in human history. There are victories along the way, but none of the victories are secure because of the pressures that undermine women's rights and advancement. Because reproductive rights are taken for granted, people who oppose them have been able to go on the offensive and make gains that do not reflect the will of the majority. So now, women who value their autonomy have to step up and take action. She said that in 2003 as a senator. And
I doubt that that's changed since.
I don't think so. And there she needs support. You know, that's where progressive radio and progressive blogs, that's what they could be advocating for.
And that's the thing that I keep trying to work toward, Preston, and I hope I'm not keeping you on the line too long. But it's the issues and not the people.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because I'm a crabby 45-year-old or because, I'd like to think I've got a little bit of enlightenment about me. And I want to keep focused on the issues. Because when you get sucked up into a cult of personality and you invest yourself in a personality, and I'm not aiming that at Obama, and I'm not aiming that at Hillary Clinton, it's a phenomenon that I've seen in politics that extends from the county, the ward healer all the way up to the president. Okay,
yeah.
And it's this notion that we define ourselves by virtue of the success of our chosen candidate. I call it the end zone dance factor.
Yep.
You know, if my candidate wins, I get to dance in the end zone.
Yep. Yeah, we really need to avoid that kind of, you know, cult of personality dynamic, and also of putting so many of our political eggs in the electoral basket. I mean,
because you will get your heart broken.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be some victories, like Kucinich's recent victory. That was great. John Elliott actually did a good job of supporting him in the upcoming to that election challenge that he had in Ohio. But, you know, there are so many people, you know, 2000 happened and it came out the wrong way, so they're depressed for the next 4 years. And then they put all their hope into the next election, and then we lose again, and then they're kind of demoralized and neutralized. But we've got votes to make every single day as consumers, as people who can write and speak on issues, blog, message boarding.
Yeah.
Communicate, advocate, educate.
Everything has a moral and an ethical aspect to it, Preston.
Yeah.
And it is not, it's nobody's fault but our own if we fail to recognize that fact.
And we all have power and choices and opportunities, not just elected officials.
Yeah, and I don't have to be a part of some sort of giant embargo, or I don't have to, and see, again, there's that cultish, that, or, I don't know, tribal nature. If I go to the store and I make purchasing decisions based upon the best information that I have as relates to ethics and morality, I don't need the validation of a big group saying, yay, Bob, you know, you did the right thing. I've done the right thing. I'll tell other people when I get the opportunity what I think the right thing is, and hope that maybe other people will make decisions along with me on it. But I don't need to be validated by some gigantic group. Maybe that's an overarching reason why, you know, I'm happy doing what I'm doing here instead of hitting the bricks and trying to get myself a gig doing, you know, 6 to 9 in Poughkeepsie.
Right. Right.
We have to seek our own contentment, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right. And the, you know, the paths to it are going to be changing so oftentimes. And, you know, the opportunities we have to engage politically are changing all the time. Another thing Hillary Clinton was advocating recently was farmers markets. And I was like, right on.
No, it's hard for me to look at somebody I respect like Paul Krugman. I mean, it's hard not to respect Paul Krugman. He's been right about a lot of stuff. He's earned the right to my respect, not to my adulation, worship, or anything like that, but to my respect. And when he says that he's put both candidates side by side and that Hillary Clinton is the more progressive of the two, it gets some weight. I don't say that it gets, you know, overarching weight, but it gets some weight.
Some of these endorsements really do matter. What Carolyn was saying, that was her judgment. The Farm Workers Union, you know, when the Kennedys, Ted and Caroline, endorsed Obama, that was very interesting how that was covered, and I thought that was great, and I was like, good for them. But, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. endorsed Hillary.
And this is, yeah, Robert Kennedy Jr. endorsed Hillary, and Robert Kennedy Jr. has been here. He has flown over these mountains. He has seen the devastation of mountaintop removal, Preston. He has stood, I wasn't 6 feet from him when he said, if this was done anywhere, if this was done by a foreign power to America, mountaintop removal would be considered an act of war.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure he struggles with some of the decisions being made or proposals being put forth regarding coal. And what would the Clinton administration do regarding that? And so, again, our heart's going to be broken. But at the same time,
and I'm not going to slow down. I'm not going to slow down 1 mile an hour, as far as mountaintop removal is concerned, regardless of who is elected president, Preston. I mean, we can't, because it's not so much the politician, but the impact that the money has had on the politician. You know, when you want to be president, and somebody comes up in a silk suit and says, well, "I got $250,000 here," says you're behind clean coal technology.
Right.
And you're sitting here trying to scrape up every penny you can because you know what a media fight you're going to be in if you get the nomination? Real easy to suddenly be for clean coal, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll leave you with this last bit of good news, actually. Colorado, we opened our wind turbine factory this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a company called Vestas, and I think they're from Denmark. But, you know, sometimes people have a problem with foreign companies coming here to set up shop, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe we'll get the workers will get better health care and more days off.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, are they bringing the European attitude toward how you treat your workers? Build another one.
Good question. And they were going to hire 400 people, but it's ended up being 650. So people are excited.
Oh, boy, what wouldn't I give to see an operation like that come to a place like West Virginia, where we've got mountains sticking up in the air where you can go and test the efficacy of one of your wind turbines?
That's
the kind of thing we need.
Sure
we
thing.
Desperately need it. Preston, wonderful conversation, and I wish you a wonderful weekend.
Likewise, Bob.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Fridays are so much fun. I'll tell you what, we'll take a little break and come back, see what's happening in labor news, you know, the usual song kind of thing going on. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob, and hopefully you'll be on the phones in a few minutes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The power of the UAW strike against American Axle is being felt, and the impact is growing every day as GM is forced to close plants. 80% of American Axle's business is supplying GM. Despite being profitable, American Axle is demanding wages be cut in half and is out to eliminate pensions and health benefits for future retirees. 7 GM plants have already been closed by workers' strike power. 5 more face shutdown on Monday. Talks between the UAW and American Axle are underway again as workers continue to resist deep concessions. What else does John McCain have in store for us if he manages to take the White House? Besides bomb, 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 bomb Iran and another 100 years of pouring blood and money into the sands of Iraq. Well, how about destroying Social Security with Bush's privatizing scheme? The Wall Street Journal reports that McCain wants to take another run at Social Security, despite the total rejection of that idea when Bush tried it. The AFL-CIO says McCain's willingness to gamble with Social Security shows how out of touch he is with the everyday lives of working families. Will the $35 billion deal granted to a European company by the Air Force go forward? Jesse Russell reports.
Representative John Murtha told the Air Force on Wednesday that if he finds the Paris-based Airbus was given a $35 billion tanker deal over U.S.-based Boeing unfairly, his committee could pull funding. Representative Norm Dix of Washington, where Boeing is based, accused the Pentagon of pulling a bait and switch. He said the Air Force told Boeing they were looking for a smaller plane, so the company pitched the 767, while Airbus pitched their larger A330. Dix said that if the Air Force had been honest about what it was looking for, Boeing would have offered the 777. The Air Force denies the accusation. The International Association of Machinists said in a statement that the contract signals it is open season on American aerospace jobs. The IAM represents 35,000 Boeing workers. The Air Force is scheduled to appear on Friday to further explain their decision, after which Boeing has 10 days to file a formal complaint. Here is today's economic report. More stormy weather for the economy as foreclosures hit an all-time high. 900,000 households are now in the process of foreclosure. According to Mortgage Bankers Association, that number is up a dizzying 71% over a year ago. 381,000 of those foreclosures started during the last quarter. And that isn't the end of it. The number of borrowers who were 30 days late on payments in the last quarter of 2007 hit their highest number since 1985. That's a bad omen for the first quarter of 2008.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You heard the phone number. Learn it, know it, use it. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com these days. And just for explanatory purposes, I got a question a day or so ago that I've been late getting around to answering, but I will now. And that is, how is it that having a computer go down screws up your email server? Well, it doesn't. But I guess I'd have to take pictures to make it more comprehensible. All of my old email and all of my address book and all that is on the machine that went down. And yeah, I could set up Outlook on this machine, but actually I wasn't, and this is, you know, this is strictly my fault. I wasn't planning on using this sort of stopgap machine this long. Who knew that Asus was so incompetent? But they are. So that's the answer to that. So the regular bob@headonradio.com email is on the laptop over here, and if you've ever heard me doing this, that's grabbing the microphone like some rock and roll star so I can reach over and, you know, get the angle and read at the same time that I'm talking, because it's not... It's a tiny little studio. It's a shoebox, okay? That's why we're so bananas to build the highfalutin, super-duper... double secret probation studio where we can have enough room to whip a cat. Well, okay, no, PETA people, lay off. It's no, we're not whipping cats here. It's a saying. But have enough room to you know, get done what we need to get done. So, you know, that's what that is. Another email rolled in that is disturbing to me. And this is one of those where I got to do the... Hi, Bob, says the email. Time for the none of the above vote. Ordinarily, it gets to be around my birthday in October when I just can't stand the political season anymore. It's March 7th, and if I hear Carolyn Kay crowing about one Dino corporate whore winning over another Dino corporate to face the GOP corporate whore anymore, I will never send the horn a dime. Yes, I'm that angry about the whole thing. In fact, I'm not even listening now. I'll wait until after the top of the hour to tune back in. And all I can say is, wow. I didn't realize that I did not realize that the horn had become an echo chamber. I didn't realize that the only reason we were here was to validate whichever of our opinions we thought was most valid. Validate, valid, you know what I'm saying. I didn't know that we couldn't tolerate one opinion or another. Now, you know my opinion. These people are flawed human beings with feet of clay. As such, I am not investing my time in one of them is God and one of them is Satan. I just know that I'm going to vote for one of them in November. And I'm not going to choose none of the above, because I do know that there are places where they are night and day between them and McCain. And I know that, well, you know, but I'm also not somebody to give marching orders. If you don't think the horn is worth supporting, don't. That's all I can say. But it grieves me to hear things like that, because I thought, you know, I don't know, I thought we were a little bit more enlightened than this. Oh, and a question coming up in the chat room that needs answering anyway. Does Peter still not have his internet? Peter had internet earlier today. Peter Godbold, our IT professional, and more importantly, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host of Strictly Confidential. I heard from Peter around noon, and he was positively giddy because he had his broadband back. And then, a little bit later, he didn't have it anymore. The technical problem had been solved, but apparently tornadoes and apparently Godzilla were making their way across North Florida and took him out again. I have not since heard from him. I talked to him about, 5:30 Eastern time. I said, listen, if the line goes hot again, I said, you've already done all your show prep. He says, I've been ready. I got enough stuff to do 5 shows in one night. I said, so if the thing suddenly comes back on, you're good to go. He says, absolutely. But I haven't heard from him, so I'm assuming that he is still trapped in dial-up hell. So it is, you know, what it is, and we'll have a rerun of Strictly Confidential tonight. And also, just so you'll know, the horn section will be a rerun as well, because otherwise it would be a horn solo. And on a Friday, I don't want to do a horn solo. Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner will be along at midnight with Rick's Place, and he's working on his weekend show as well as lining up an interview for tonight. So he's going to be a little bit too up against the wall to be able to join me for the horn section. So we'll have a rerun at 9. The reruns will go until midnight. That's 3 hours. And then at midnight, we will have a live new Rick's Place for you. And it should be a dandy. Which ones aren't? This should be a dandy. So there's the programming schedule. Don't forget, of course, a brand new fresh. It's already in my email for me to download and get ready to go. Can you believe it? 34 editions. 34 editions of Billy Shears and Night Sounds coming your way. For 34 straight weeks. My goodness, he's only 18 shows away from his one-year anniversary. Can you believe it? Just amazing. So that's coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow evening, Saturday evening. I hope you'll all join us for it. I hope you'll join us in the chat room to sit and hang out and be sort of non-political for a day or so, or not a day or so, for 3 hours or so, and just kick back and enjoy whatever it is you like to enjoy on a Saturday night and let it all sort of be water off a duck's back. And, of course, Rick's Place and Night Sounds run in rotation for the rest of the weekend. And for those of you who were wondering, and I've had a couple of emails about it, the Sowards Report, we hope to have back sometime soon, but, you know, when you're in college, things change from semester to semester, and schedules change, and time commitments change. And Matt Sowards and Devin Swartz sort of got scheduled right out of their access to the studio down at WMUL in Huntington on the campus of Marshall University. So that's why that's that way. But we hope they'll be back. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
Well, I say you're looking for ice or waiting for the snow.
Well, I mean, it could be snow by the time it gets here. The email I got was from south of here saying that it's supposed to be solid ice. I hope it's not ice, because ice makes rotten things happen.
Well, I know. Well, like I say, I assume David over in Nashville's probably getting snow. They were saying like the west end of the state up into Kentucky was getting just hammered.
Actually, that was the email I got, and it was ice.
Oh, well, you know how much fun that is.
Yeah, and what it does is it sort of swirls up. Usually what hits him hits me about 9 to 12 hours later, because it just loops and swoops and, you know, bang, there it is right on top of us.
All right, let's see what we're going to talk about. Well, Tuesday night after I talked to you, I shut down because they were doing all their blabbering about the primaries. And I said, I don't want to hear them because they ain't going to say nothing for 3 hours. You know what I mean? So I got up about midnight, turned on the TV to see what time it was, and by golly, it was so much fun watching Chris Matthews having to paste a fake smile on his face as he announced Hillary Clinton had won Ohio. You can just sit there and just see the blood vessels in his eyes just pop. It was enjoyable.
At some point, I think his head's going to explode on air, or the guys in the white coats are just going to come get him.
Well, did you see the thing? I think I sent you the link out of Medium. The thing where Oberman was on to him. They were talking about, you know.
Yeah, don't use that. Yeah.
The bitch is the new black.
Yeah.
They said, Chris, that's one word you should stay away from.
You of all people should stay away from. Yeah, we ran that soundbite. It was, I got a giggle out of it.
Oh, I tell you. Oh, just for anybody's inference, I guess here in about 35 minutes we get Bill Moyers, and tonight he's doing the story on Mr. McCain and some fellow named James Hagee. And he's been about to, he'll apparently be about the only person I've seen do a real good story on it.
Yeah, because look. This is the early indication. McCain gets a pass. It's not fair to pick on the old, balding, pasty-faced, pudgy white dude who's arguably a war criminal. No,
well,
he gets a pass.
Think of this. Okay, we'll jump on Obama because somebody said something nice about him that he didn't ask him to say something nice about him. But you have to refute it, or else we're gonna tie you to him. But John McCain can go out there and apparently solicit this guy's help, but no, you can't hold anything against him.
No, you can, right. McCain actively chases down Hagee.
Yeah.
And well, that's, you know, that's understandable. I mean, of course, the right-wing evangelicals, they're, it's just natural that they'd find themselves a fit with John McCain, who once said that they were poison.
You know, it's just so, you know, like I say, you go to Media Matters and some of the others and just some of our good sites and just see some of the stuff that, like I say, our corporate media, it just gives John McCain just a free ride on. Oh, no, he's a maverick. We can't say anything bad about that. Well, of course, we can't mention the fact that John McCain's flip-flopped on this, you know, on the immigration. We can't mention the fact he's flip-flopped on taxes. We can't mention the fact he's flip-flopped on Iraq. No, we can't do any of that.
No, and we can't, again, mention that he has referred to the evangelical right as intolerant. No. But at least Pastor Hagee did come out and tell Glenn Beck that Obama is not the Antichrist. Which, of course, is code for all the religious freaks to go, I'm not sure, Brother Hagee, I think he might be.
Well, let me tell you this. Our local right-wing station here, not the really bad right-wing station, but the right-wing
How can
station,
you tell?
Oh, trust me. The one that's the really bad one, the host of the show, is the head of the Tennessee Conservative Union.
Okay, that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah. So, they were asking today, their third hour was, is it true Obama is the Antichrist? They talked about that for an hour.
What did I just say? I had no idea you were going to mention that. I'm going to get some sort of, like, costume or something, just sit here like some sort of Svengali.
Get the crystal ball out. Come on, turn it on.
Yeah, I use the magic eight ball.
Oh,
answer
okay.
Hazy, ask again later.
What's the new one they've got now? Instead of the black one, that's the red one, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah. The new one I saw was red instead of black. I'm like, okay. I don't know what it wasn't the eight ball, but it was something like that. And it looked just exactly like the old magic eight ball used to look.
Probably wouldn't matter. I'd still get answer hazy, ask again later.
That too is true. But no, it's like I say, it'll just be interesting to watch. Like I say, watch the talking heads this weekend just to see how they can say something without saying something, which is what they do every weekend. You know, I was sitting here and I had the sound off earlier tonight.
I'm Tim Russert. Today's topic, Hillary Clinton. When she eats babies, does she prefer them deep fried or barbecued? Our panel will be back with the answer right after this from Corporate America.
No, from clean coal, of course.
Oh, yeah. God.
I mean, NBC, have you noticed them and MSNBC both? I mean, they stuck up to that group. Man, the group of clean coal is spending the money on their advertising.
They have to, because they have to make it abundantly clear that your lights are going to go off if they don't get to blow up my community.
I decided what mountaintop removal is strip mining standing up, you know.
Yeah, right. Or you know, our good friend Judy Bonds calls it strip mining on steroids. It's strip mining. If Arnold Schwarzenegger did strip mining, it would be mountaintop removal.
Amazing enough, that's my favorite description of McCain, Bush on steroids.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a distinct...
Better.
If that man gets to be President Luke, there is a distinct chance that in 4 or 8 years, we will wind up, all of us, sitting here going, Jesus, and we thought Bush was bad.
This too is true.
Imagine what will...
They'll do it with a smile on their faces.
Imagine what will have to happen in order to drive us to that point, though.
Well,
I mean,
have you heard some of the things he's talking about now? He's talking about going back and visiting Social Security again.
I know. That was just on the Labor Radio News. Listen, there was an... remember, please. Social Security was passed in the 1930s without a single Republican vote on either the Democratic or on the House or Senate side of Congress. Not one Republican voted for it. And they went home that day and they told their children, someday you'll kill it. Well, their children didn't get to, so they told the grandkids, someday you'll kill it. Well, we're on about the great-grandkids now, and I don't care if it's the great-great-great-great-grandkids, they're going to keep trying to kill Social Security, Luke, because they despise it. Because it helped make a little bit more America a little bit more decent place to live, and any time that things get decent for the poor or the middle class, then the rich and the repiglican somehow feel threatened by it.
Oh, can I bring up something totally off topic now? You want to call it silly news? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you see the one I sent you about the thing down in Texas?
Which thing down in Texas?
About them trying to stop production of a devices that some people use.
Oh, yeah, the dildo wars.
Yeah, I saw that, and I just was like, I won't be around to see this guy get when he runs for election next
year. Yeah,
time.
And for the and for people who may not know, you know, the Fifth Circuit Court, was it the Fifth? It was some circuit court of appeals,
yeah,
overturned Texas's dildo ban.
Well, you remember,
and now the Attorney General of Texas is asking for a rehearing on it, because just in the time since that thing was overturned, Texas is just covered up in marital aids.
Doc Johnson's running wild. Oh, my God.
Oh, God. And I saw there was a video that went along.
Yeah.
With Molly Ivins. And it covered the whole Texas sodomy thing and what you have to do if you want to buy a marital aid in, what's it called, Forbidden Pleasures in Austin.
Oh,
you have
God.
To go in and say, I need a demonstration model for my safer sex demonstration. Because they don't sell any dildos at God, I've said it four times now. So what?
But I mean, I just saw that it was just so, you know, over the top. You're just like kind of going somewhere here. Must say published by the Onion, where it's got to say.
Please, no, it's very, very real. And the thing is, you know, what's funny? This marks Texas as slightly more progressive than Alabama, because Alabama's ban is still in place, and that's why that poor Southern Baptist minister in Montgomery had to die.
You know, there's some states, like say, I think if you know, I'd be afraid to have an adult bookstore, because I, like say, they'd be shooting through the doors.
Yeah, they would. It's
it's like I've always said. It's one of those things. You know, I'll object to them when somebody's standing out in the road with a shotgun saying, "Go on in here, you got to buy something." Until they do that, it's like the lottery. Until somebody's standing out there with a gun saying, "You've got to come in here and buy this or I'm going to shoot you," okay, that's a problem. Until then, it's your choice.
I love the way Molly Ivins described it in the video, and it's over at Alternet, by the way. It's called The Dildo Wars. She said, in the state of Texas, if you own six, you are presumed to be possessing with intent to deliver, and that's a felony. If you own five, however, you're just a hobbyist.
Oh, God, yeah. It's one of those things that, like, say, sometimes you just sit there and go, you know, this is from a foreign country. Please tell me it's from a foreign country. This can't be happening in America. You know? I mean, oh, have you seen the thing going, also talking about the Spanish are having their election?
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Spanish are having their election, and it's the socialists versus the conservatives over there. And, like, say, and the conservatives, you know, the ones who lost power when, I can't remember what the guy's name was. There was the president that was a big supporter of George Bush's. And he lost it 3-4 years ago. And they're having they're sort of like their 50-50, you know what I mean, roughly.
Yeah.
And it's like the Catholics and all this are on one side and all, you know, oh, it was just so much parallel to what we're doing. It isn't. You know what I mean. And you sit there and look at some of the arguments, and you go, I could see our guys doing that just the same.
Yeah.
But, oh, gosh. You know, some of these people, you're just like, you were talking about FDR. You know, it's like every once in a while, I don't know who it was, I think it's Tom Hartman used to run that clip with Limbaugh, you know, where he talks about, you know, about killing FDR's laws.
Right.
So, but like I say, if we don't, it's one of those things. As I say, I guess we've all got to keep after it, because if we don't, like I say, these are the people who are going to slip in and put little things in. And it's like down here, they tried to get one stuck in this year that hallelujah, the legislature fought them, but they were trying to get a thing put in this year to have a referendum on teaching about homosexuality in the schools, and the legislature said, because they were trying to put this in so they can, you know, drive up the religious people out to vote, and the court or whatever it is threw it out, and they said, this goes before a school board, not us. So if you want to have somebody teach this, you bring this up before the school board first. But, you know, I mean, they're going to start trying to bring up some stuff, you know, in your local elections so they can drive up their people. They'll bring something up about abortion, or they'll bring something up about homosexuals, or they'll bring something up about the schools to try to drive up their people to get them out to vote in November.
I don't know how many times Peter Godbold has said, Luke, that the gay community has been flogged as the single greatest fundraising tool that the religion industry has ever had. And it's just true.
Yeah, I mean that's what they do. It's like, oh yeah, if you don't do this, they're going to have them in the street. They're going to be, you know, breaking down your doors to come into your house. What?
Yep. Well, you know, every time Peter did let out, I don't think he meant to, but one evening on the program, he did let out that he gets a toaster. Every gay person gets a toaster every time they convert someone to the cause. Just houses full of toasters. You know, that gay recruiting and gay agenda. Oh, my God.
Boxes on boxes on boxes. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Well, I'll tell you what, if you ever want to see something interesting lately, I'm sure Peter would enjoy it. I don't know if he has. Have you ever seen Torchwood?
I don't think so.
Okay, sometimes if you ever get the option to look over some stuff on BBC America, Torchwood's the Doctor Who spinoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the guy who's the lead actor in it is gay, and he plays essentially a bisexual character. And let's put it this way, they're quite free with interpersonal relations.
I'll be darned. Okay. Well, I'll make sure that I tell him about that.
Sometimes you get a chance. I think they've already got their first season out on DVD.
Okay, Luke, are you all ready for the big dance?
Oh Lordy, we're just waiting to see which way it goes. Monday night on HBO, I think it's Brian Gumbel's thing. They're having a thing on Bruce Pearl, talking about.
Oh, on Real Sports?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. It's kind of interesting now when you have them, and then you have Pat Summitt over on the other side. Life is pretty good if you're a basketball fan right now.
Yeah, in Tennessee, especially in Knox Vegas.
Well, like I said, the first time they've won the outright SEC championship in 41 years. They've had it split before in the last 4 years, but this first time.
No way, but there's no way you're less than a number two seed.
Well, I say we're figuring number. Telling how the Duke North Carolina game goes, we ought to be a number one.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's no way you're less than a number two, though.
I know. So we'll just
but the question is, do you get to stay home?
Well, we won't be home. We'll be close to it. But the fun one right now, the bigger question right now, the SEC is going, is Florida going to actually make it in?
Yeah,
be the first champion that didn't make it the next year.
But after graduating an entire team, you know, Billy Donovan had his work cut out for him this year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, let me let you go on, but I know you got other people.
All right. Hey, Luke, have yourself a great weekend, all right? Take it easy now.
Have at it.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Well, I can't. Luke brought up the great Texas dildo massacre story. So, no way I can let an opportunity like that go by without playing this.
I am a good Christian, got a good congregation, my wife's on vacation. And the kids are all grown. I've got me some swimsuits. Rubber's my desire. Got a head mask of latex that makes me just moan. Send me a dildo. I can't buy one in Montgomery. Send me a sex toy. But the deacons can't know. Just give me one ear hole that I can breathe in through. Untie me with bungees, fix them just so. Seminary, prayed Jesus to cleanse me of my dirty thoughts. I prayed and got married. We had a baby. But rubber and latex got me all tied up in knots. Send me a dildo and buy one in Montgomery. Send me a sex toy, but the deacons can't know. Just give me one air hole that I can breathe in through. Play me a tune on my rusty trombone. Just hear it buzzing, and I can't do nothing, all tied up like this. I'm getting lightheaded, and the dark's so complete now. I can hear angels singing, and the rubber's just like a kiss. Send me a dildo, I can't buy one in Montgomery. Send me a sex toy, I guess the wife's gonna know. Give me an air hole that I can breathe in through. Hard timing with bungees and fixing just so. Send me a dildo, I can't buy one in Montgomery. Send me a sex toy, I guess the wife's gonna know.
Oh, and speaking of dildos, Oliver North was on Fox yesterday. I told you this terrorist thing would... terrorist thing. Oh, my God, they've got me doing it. I told you this thing with the little pop bomb going off in front of the military recruiting station in New York would get legs. Yeah, Ollie North was on Fox this morning, and he offered an explanation for why, how, and who made the bomb go off in New York. Now, I'm not kidding. Yeah, you know what this... Sure you do, but let's listen anyway. Not every day you get to listen to a talking dildo.
Well, let me make an observation here. Just, last month, of course, the U.S. House of Representatives, at the direction of Nancy Pelosi, went on vacation rather than voting on the Protect America Act, which provided for wiretapping of terrorists making phone calls into and out of the United States.
These guys are so predictable.
Foreign places. And I note that it would have been a lot easier, perhaps, to find out who did this, or even to know that they were planning it, had we been able to intercept those communications. All that said...
Really, Ollie? We need to intercept the communications of the Central Intelligence Agency? Or, assuming for a moment that it really was a homegrown, radicalized terrorist, they're so unmitigatedly stupid that they're going to make phone calls about it? Yeah, Bill, I've got the bomb built. Where do you want me to put the bomb? Well, that's great, Fred. Tell you what, why don't you put the bomb in front of the recruiting station in Times Square? Okay, Bill, I'll put the bomb in front of the recruiting station in Times Square. And meanwhile, Agent Fred, down in the bowels of the NSA, gets a little light blinking from the Uniblab 9000, because the word bomb has been heard. Of course, the word bomb probably gets used every 1.2 seconds all over this country in phone calls, so there are probably 19 damn dozen other lights. Oh, we've got a bomb alert! Agent Fred, we have a bomb alert! Well, let's check it out.
Oh, man, I was at the concert last night. They were the bomb. Wrong one. Well, you know, I guess we can cast her, but I tell you what, the last two times that she's been in a play, it's been a bomb. Oh, damn. Well, you see, what I did is I made the cake. It's really more of a tort. And then instead of making an icing, I made a more of a bomb to go on, to glaze it with. Agent Fred, I don't think we're ever going to get any. Ah, never mind. There's nothing in that.
I think it's important for all of our viewers to understand this is very likely not terrorism. It's more likely to be vandalism.
Oh, okay. I got it now. So what we want to do is expand domestic surveillance, otherwise known as spying, to encompass vandalism. Got it, Ollie. Why don't you go for another naked run down the road on down your block? I don't know. Go count the money you've got still got squirreled away from Iran-Contra in your closet, you silly freak. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. Long time no talk to you. Doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm not driving a truck anymore.
Oh, really? Got off the road, did you?
Yeah. I'm about to get back home, though. I'm going to start driving my Sprinter van.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah, around the country.
Shorter runs, or, you know, more reasonable hours.
I'll be doing long runs, but at least I can find a place to park this thing compared to a tractor-trailer truck.
True. What's happening?
How about that payoff, you know, they're supposed to burn those houses down.
Yeah.
I kind of doubt that they did that. I'm such, I guess, a conspiracy type of person. I feel like the government probably did it. Who knows? Probably the government blew up that, did that bomb in New York yesterday, too. Seems like a track record.
Well, you know, we've just gotten to a point where we've got a government that is capable and that is easily believable for doing that kind of thing. What are we supposed to think?
Yeah. Remember that woman who was an environmentalist, I think it was, and she had a bomb under her seat, and they said that she was carrying it, and I don't really think she was carrying the bomb. I think somebody planted it under the seat.
Makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, why would somebody carry a bomb under the seat they put in the trunk?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah, so it's hard to trust our government these days after the assassination of Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy.
Well, after things like Operation Northwoods, where the CIA wanted to bomb an American city and blame it on the Cubans. Yeah, and you know, that's not made up stuff. That really happened.
Yeah, and I got a relative who's got a sign on the back of this car. My car do not run off Citgo gas. And I think I'm finding out that when you go to a Chevron, Shell, Texaco, anything, you could be buying gasoline from Venezuela.
Well, sure.
Is that true?
Well, I love the idea. My car doesn't run on Citgo gas. No, it runs on Saudi gas. Hey, I'm feeling so much better.
Yeah. I mean, why don't they say it that way?
Yeah. My car runs on fuel from the same country that attacked our country on 9/11. Man, do I feel patriotic now.
Yeah, this is a relative that still uses the N-word, so I guess you could just figure.
Oy. Yeah, those people, sad to say, are still around.
Yeah, I guess the only thing you can do is feel sorry for them.
No, you can despise them, too, on your off time. You can despise them off the clock. I know, it's a little bit difficult when they're relations, but, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking my call. If I'm ever up your way, I'll try to stop by. I think I'm going to enjoy driving a Sprinter van a lot more than driving a tractor trailer truck around the country, because I believe that these trucking companies are not putting, and Walmart and the Target and all these people are not putting the money back into the infrastructure, and that's why you see all these tractor trailer trucks parked on the ramps, because they can't find a place to park at night.
Well, I never thought about it that way. You've got a strong point.
Yeah, they're not paying their taxes to have bigger rest stops.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't want to be building rest areas because, you know, that's communism.
Oh, no, we can't have a socialism in this country.
No.
We got to have Blackwater and all this privatization. That's really wonderful.
Yeah, Blackwater, CACI, yeah, sure. I can't wait till we get to where we've got real freedom on the American road, and we get America out of the road business altogether and give it to the corporations like it needs to be.
So you're joking there.
Yeah, that would be sarcasm.
Yeah. I would like to see more railroads, though.
Oh, me too.
So I appreciate you. Hey, I've been listening to more Link TV while I'm at home. I really love that channel.
I'd love to get that. Unfortunately, my two tin cans and a string cable system doesn't offer it. So I don't know. At some point, I'm thinking we may have to go to satellite or something just to get a decent.
Yeah, I think it's DirecTV that has it. And it is worth it just to get DirecTV just for that one channel.
Well, they've been running, what is it, Burning the Future? A really great documentary about mountaintop removal lately. I think Lottie in the chat room was talking about it a little bit last night. I'd like to see that in a big way.
What channel is that coming up?
It was running on Link.
Oh, Link? Oh, I missed that one. I got to see that one. I got my father interested in mountaintop removal issue because he grew up, part of his childhood was growing up in West Virginia.
Yeah.
So I downloaded,
well, tell him they've started doing it not too awful far from where he grew up.
Yeah, I told him that. And I told him about you hearing explosions while you're on the air.
Yeah. It's every day now.
Uh-huh.
All right, Alan. Okay, you have yourself a great weekend, all right?
All right, I'll be listening.
Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, let's see. Yeah, let's try to get one more phone call in. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Ed, what's up?
Not a lot. I've tried to call in a couple times, but you got so many calls waiting.
It's been stacking up a little bit. You doing okay?
Pretty good. I've had to been down the flu for about a week.
Oh, mercy. Isn't that awful? That thing hit us like a sledgehammer.
Oh, man. But I wanted to ask you something. I know you haven't got but a couple minutes. What about this thing on Michigan and
Florida?
Florida, yeah.
I guess we're going to have a do-over.
By that terminology, you mean what?
Another election. They'll go back to the polls.
A do-over.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't understand what you said. I'm against that. I don't care, you know, I don't care which one would win or whatever, but if they get away with this kind of stuff, then the next one could jump out and do it.
Yeah, but Ed, the Democratic Party has to take into account that if they don't do something about making Floridian and Michigander votes count, you might very well be able to write off both states to John McCain.
Yeah,
and having John McCain in the White House is just it's almost scarier than having Bush, because that evil old bastard is even meaner than George is.
He's just a longer arm of Bush. Yeah, I agree, but there has to be some kind of rules, and they knew what the rules were, and
chose to flout them.
Yeah, you know.
But how can you hold the voter responsible for that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That don't make the people responsible, but they're responsible for putting the jerks in there that went ahead with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but where the party leadership is concerned, not so much, Ed.
I mean, you and me, we'll go to the polls in May, and we're not gonna pick the head of the West Virginia Democratic Party. He gets appointed by the governor, or he gets appointed by the highest ranking Democrat in the state. Yeah. I imagine something similar probably occurs in Florida. They don't go to the polls and vote for the head of the Florida Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, you know what? Whoever done that, the person that's responsible, they should kick their hind in out. I mean, they shouldn't be in there. If they have no more respect for rules and orders, I don't care what you go at, and I'm not really gung-ho on a bunch of rules, especially laws, but when you've got a procedure to go by stuff like elections and stuff like that, it ain't helter-skelter. I mean, there's got to be some kind of order about it. And like I said, I'm not a freak.
Oh, I know. You're not rule oriented even a little bit, Ed.
So I'm against them going ahead and doing this, unless it would jeopardize a Democrat getting in, even though we don't have much for a Democrat running.
Isn't that man? You just said a mouthful.
But anyway, I know you got I know that time is short. And
well, call back sometime next week when we got more time to chat, all right?
Yeah, I do, but there's Bob, you're a busy man with people. I've called in and
it would be distinctly easier if I still had a producer back here, but she's busy being mommy and grandma now. Not to mention chief cook and bottle washer.
Yeah, well, that's a full-time job, but
it's actually more like two or three full-time jobs, I think, Ed.
Yeah. But anyway, I enjoyed you taking my call. I'm glad I got it in. I'm glad that you shed the light on that it could make the difference between who gets in the White House. I didn't realize.
My whole focus, Ed, I'm tired of the petty bickering between Obama and Clinton, and my whole focus, I swear, my whole focus is on beating John McCain. I don't care if we beat him with Obama. I don't care if we beat him with Hillary. I want him beat.
Yeah. Well, you know what? All these endorsements that, like the two representatives from the state come out in Washington for Obama, Bob, I got a feeling that some of them people know something on Hillary.
Based on what Obama said in this rally that I got turned on to, I think they just like his stand on coal better than Hillary's. Because when Obama stands in front of a crowd and says he wants Appalachia to be the Saudi Arabia of coal, man, that went through me like a dose of salt.
Meaning?
Whatever
else she was for him?
Well, no, not necessarily, but I was kind of leaning that way.
Yeah.
But Saudi Arabia of coal, and I'm supposed to swallow that?
Yeah, well, I've
seen pictures of Saudi Arabia. It's not a nice place.
Yeah. Well, I have too, and but I'm almost at the point of making up my mind not to vote in the presidential election.
Oh God, you can't do that, Ed. You can't do that.
But
you just can't do that.
These two people is the nearest nothing to the even bad politicians that I've ever seen. And that bickering they're doing, you know what? I am so sick of politics, and you know what kind of politician I am.
I know, but Ed, just think about it, man. If you stay home, you might have to look up and go, me staying home helped John McCain be president.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'd like looking at that feller in the morning to shave.
I don't like looking at him no time.
No, I mean you wouldn't want to look at you in the mirror in the morning to shave knowing that you helped put McCain in office, would you?
No, for sure. But I'm telling you, these other two
I know you may have to go into the voting booth in November with two clothespins on your nose.
Yeah, and close both eyes closed.
Yep.
Just take a punch. but anyway, Bob, are you going off at 9 o'clock?
Yeah, I'm a little over time now, but it's always it's always worth it for you, Ed.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, and I'll talk to you a little later.
All right. You take care.
All right. Tell everybody we said hi.
Hey to Dreamer.
All righty.
All right. Bye.
Night.
Our good buddy Ed from right here in Fayette County. That's it. You all have a, as I've been saying, wonderful weekend. Don't forget Rick's Place coming up at midnight Eastern time. Don't forget Billy Shears and Night Sounds and the weekend edition of Rick's Place coming up this weekend. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. You felt like you could sit down and drink a beer with, it was Bill Clinton, not George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton would sit down and hammer back a six-pack with you and explain to you in a way that you could understand why why certain things in the world were the way they were, because he's a brilliant man. He's a flipping genius.
George would steal your beer.
George would steal your beer.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 111 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. We're also supported by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Thank you. Thank you indeed for making Strictly Confidential a